It's time for Mac Break Weekly, and there's lots to talk about. We will go in with a fine-tooth comb over Mike Isaac's article about Uber because it has a really interesting impact on Apple, on iPhones, and your privacy. We'll also talk about Apple changing its affiliate commission on the App Store, which is making a big difference in a bad way for a lot of people. And iPhone 8 rumors. Where will that fingerprint reader be? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 556, recorded Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. Unroll me. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe, expandable, yet simple-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobostore.com to learn more and use the code TWIT10 to save 10% off select Drobos, including the new Drobo 5N2. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. There should be an echo on that. Joining us right now, I'm so thrilled to have her back, Kelly Guimont. Am I saying your name right? Should I say Guimont?
You can, but mostly it's just Guimont. So nice, vulgar, Americanized pronunciation. Yeah.
Welcome to Ellis Island, Guimont.
Kelly, basically, yeah.
Kelly works for Mac Observer and does social media for the fabulous Smile Software. Great to have you and your smile. Andy Iannacco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. Don't yell at me. That's what he calls his website, CWOB.com.
It delivers on its promise. It says it does what my website does what it says on the packaging. It is indeed a Celestial Waste of Bandwidth.
And he's wearing a unicorn hat. Is that your team, the unicorns?
No. This is my Boston Marathon. Some people get a starter's medal. I get a didn't even kid himself at the starting.
I stood and watched. That's a great hat. I like the unicorn. Is that their
That is their official. Logo? That is the official logo. It is a unicorn. It's been for 120 years. People don't realize that the Boston Marathon was the first marathon. Or not the first. The first one that did not immediately end in a fatality, let's say.
And also here, Renee Ritchie, who walks 26.3 miles routinely just to collect Pokemon. He's from iMore.com.
Monsieur Laporte, I am thrilled to be here with Madame Guimont and Monsieur Iannacco.
You know how to say
that
name.
And I'm glad that Andy got a hat for getting one of the rare Starbucks Frappuccinos. I think that is wonderful.
Did you get a unicorn what do they call those? Unicorn Frappuccinos?
Unicorn Frappuccino.
Has anybody here had one?
No.
I read the description and my blood sugar spiked. So
we went
I
to
had
Starbucks
to pass.
And they were sold out. I wanted to buy one.
Yeah, there was
one.
A sign up on the drive-thru saying we are no longer able to fulfill requests for the unicorn, whatever frap.
I think that was
Voldemort drank
by
them all.
I think that was a post from the barista saying just as a matter of taste, we are no longer able to make these. We have the ingredients.
We'll keep you forever alive, but in an unlive state.
I actually enjoy Anthony Bourdain's quote. Wow, that's like four things I hate all in one sentence. Starbucks, unicorns, the color pink and purple, also a Frappuccino. It's the perfect nexus of awfulness.
His second book was amazing when he talked about like surreptitiously telling his kids that no one knew where the bodies were from McDonald's burgers and didn't want them to eat them. And just like kept putting those thoughts in their
mind.
That's
good. That's the trick. We tried to get them, but I wish we could have, but, wow. I think there's a lot of sugar in there, is be my guess.
I would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm just surprised they wouldn't tie it into some sort of like 80s nostalgia thing. Like you get a free Cyndi Lauper. She's on So Unusual.
Oh, Olivia Newton-John.
No. It looks like a Lisa Frank notebook or a Lisa Frank sticker collection has like, exploded, like fell into the blender while they were making your Frappuccino for you.
According to the New York Times, a unicorn food trend is taking over the internet. Oh, dear.
Are they just saying that because the unicorn, the can of unicorn meat on ThinkGeek was always funny?
Why is this unicorn and not rainbow? Like, it was rainbow bagels. Why is it unicorn Frappuccino? I don't like this lack of consistency in my
I think it started
products.
With that Snapchat filter where you're vomiting rainbows.
But then it should be a rainbow vomit Frappuccino.
Would that not sell? Oh, I don't think anybody would buy that.
I'm not a marketing genius.
The unicorn Frappuccino is aggressively glittery and pink.
And how is My Little Pony not suing everybody?
Yeah, no kidding.
Right?
So I'm leading off with something sugary, sweet, and delightful-ish. Ooh. Because the next story is the exact opposite. Let's talk about Uber.
Oh.
Hi.
Let's talk about Uber.
I don't know where to begin.
Let's talk about an Uber scandal for a change.
Yeah,
it's Tuesday. There must be three or four to choose from.
What a shock. So this is Sunday's New York Times big piece. Uber's CEO plays with fire. But the funny thing is, you know, it's all about, it says, Travis Kalanick's drive to win in life has led to a pattern of risk-taking that Times put his ride-hailing company on the brink of implosion. But they really kind of buried the lead. Well, actually, it is the lead, so I guess.
There's two leads. That's the problem. Is that there's two scandals in one story.
In one story, and it's not
in
even the point of the story.
Package.
Yeah.
So we'll start with number one. And by the way, John Gruber gets all the credit in the world for parsing this, because it's not immediately clear if you read the Times piece what's going on. For months, Kalanick had pulled a fast one on Apple by directing his employees to camouflage the ride-hailing app. Now, hold that for later, because we're gonna talk about how they camouflaged it. From Apple's engineers. The reason, so Apple would not find out that Uber had been secretly identifying and tagging iPhones. They changed that because in the original copy it said tracking. Mm-hmm. Even after its app had been deleted and the devices erased, a fraud detection maneuver that violated Apple's privacy guidelines. Now, that's all they say, really. And I think John gets a lot of credit and some others for figuring it out. They go on to say Apple was on to the deception. Tim Cook says when Kalanick comes in to meet with him in his bright red sneakers and hot pink socks. So I've heard you, not Cook, Kalanick, by the way. I don't think Cook wears
bright red sneakers.
Tasteful blue shirt.
So I should do Mr. Cook in a fine Auburn accent. So I heard you have been breaking some of our rules. Stop the trickery, Mr. Cook demanded, or Uber's app will be kicked out of the app store. And of course, you know, Kalanick promised, I will stop the trickery. But what was not clear in here is what the hell the trickery was.
So before you get to that, Leo, my favorite part is that they camouflaged it, but Apple has more than one office, and a company whose entire business is based upon location didn't realize that Apple had more than one office, and anybody outside the main office would just detect this normally.
So the way they camouflaged it is they would check in the app if they were near Cupertino, and then they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
The theory being that the app would get approved by
somebody. Sunnyvale, they get caught.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Cut to John Gruber's post from that day. He says, secretly identifying and tagging iPhones even if after its app has been deleted is a rather startling accusation, because it sounds like it should be technically impossible. It's also unclear what information Uber was able to glean. He then reads between the lines and also comes up with, I think, an exactly right story, which is the Uber app, while installed, uses forbidden or even secret APIs to get the app's unique ID, right? It's UDID.
I think it says just a little bit below. He links to Will Stroff at Chronic, who flagged it.
Chronic figured it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It uses I/O, one of the frameworks, to basically bombard it with symbols. And
private APIs using I/O Kit to pull the device serial number from the device registry. So you install the Uber app, and among other things it sends back to the home office is your phone's serial number. Why did they want that? Well, again, this is more digging. The Times kind of fumbled this. They didn't know what the important story was, I think, because they weren't technical, or Mike Isaac, who wrote it, wasn't technical enough to understand. Wait a minute. What the hell? So it turns out that Uber had a fraud problem, particularly in India. Drivers were being rewarded for the number of rides they accepted. They were getting bonused. Mm-hmm. Drivers are not dumb. They went out and bought a lot of old iPhones, put the app on it, requested rides from themselves and accepted it. Boom, 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 boom. Uber, of course, caught on and said, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to keep track of the serial numbers of phones that install the Uber app and make sure, you know, that this doesn't happen, prevent the fraud. The problem is, in order to do that, you have to break Apple's rules. Now, I think I don't blame Uber for wanting to do this. The question is the, well, yeah, you know, they could have gotten banned from the App Store, which would have been huge. On the other hand, notice Tim Cook didn't do anything but say, now, knock that off. So obviously Apple wants Uber in the App Store as much as Uber wants to be in the App Store. So mm-hmm. Apple kind of overlooked this violation. And it's a reasonable thing for Uber to want to do. The question is, did they use it in other ways to spy on customers?
Well, they were already again. It's like why I'm saying, isn't it interesting that I can't imagine a bad story about Uber. They're already doing things like tracking who in certain major cities, including Boston, are government regulators that are trying to see if Uber is doing anything illegal with their apps, and therefore if I'm a regulator in Boston, and I hail an Uber because I want to see like how is the app working.
That was another one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Taking it, yeah. Right. That, yeah. It will actually, it's identified me somewhere in a database and refuses
what
to.
Was it that gray? They called it gray ball, I think, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's
so even, they're very, very. And there are a couple others we could talk about, but it's like they're clearly playing at a certain. Not comic book supervillain level, but let's say the 1960s Batman TV show supervillain level.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Also, we know they had this God mode that would see all Uber rides going on. Mm-hmm. And if, for instance, they said
Lyft rides,
hey, I happen to know what President Trump's Uber phone is. We could tell you where Trump is at any time, right? I guess they'd know that anyway from the account information.
It reminds me of that line, though, where they said that no amount of law enforcement manpower or financing is equal to the criminals being stupid. It's just like they do this thing, and you can understand their frustration with the fraud, but there are other ways, and I believe they're doing those ways now that don't violate the rules. But back then, it was just, what's an expedient way to get this information? You know, the rules be damned. They acted first and thought second, which is a dangerous trait in a company that has this much responsibility on their service.
John Gruber says that Will Strefek said that this was in the 2014 build of Uber's iOS app, and it no longer works in iOS 10. So Apple clearly changed these API calls, these private API calls, to break this. But Gruber also points out, or asks, I think a really good question, why didn't Apple require Uber to tell its customers what they'd been doing as a condition for remaining in the store? Shouldn't Apple have said, hey, you have really violated the privacy of our customers. You need to tell them if you want to stay in the store. Why didn't they do that?
I think they should have done that.
I agree. I mean, they really need to establish that they are protecting their customers. I do think that part of it is that Uber is such, it's not just an app, it's also part of infrastructure. I wouldn't like to say that it's because Uber has really got Apple by the throat. They can't just Apple needs this app. I think it's more like Apple has the longer view that Uber isn't just this evil company that's tracking people. It's also how a lot of single parents get their kids from school to home. It's how a lot of people who cannot drive get to doctor's appointments. It's a really, really big deal to cut off tens of millions of their customers from a basic transportation infrastructure. So I've no doubt that if they refused to play ball, or if they painted them, they behaved like they're a consistent enemy always trying to work around Apple, there would have been much bigger, much broader steps. But I don't think that pulling the app is something that they felt they should do unless it's really the end of the line. Well,
but we also don't know what you like. I'm feel like I'm on pretty safe ground here asking you guys this. Do you know what all the terms and conditions are when you create that Uber account, when you install the app on your phone? Like, do you know what you're actually agreeing to?
No, I have dialogue fatigue big time with
these. Nobody reads this. Yeah. And we'll get to, by the way, that issue in a second with scandal number two in this article. But
the
other question I have, Kelly, is does Apple make money from Uber using Like if I use the Uber app and I pay for a ride, does Apple get a cut of that? Wouldn't that be a motive too for keeping it?
If you pay with Apple Pay, they'll get the transaction, but I don't believe they get anything if you're paying with.
They don't get 30% of the ride.
They don't.
No, for physical things, they don't. It's only digital goods that they get.
Uber is the transactor of your credit card because they have your credit card information on file.
So the interesting thing to me is that he gets called in front of there's a few apps that can get away with a lot. Facebook, Uber, because they're cross-platform, they're everywhere, and they're services that often define the mobile experience. And that I don't want to say it puts them above the law, but it makes it very difficult. I don't know if they were doing this on Android too. I've asked it. Nobody seems to be able to tell me if they were doing something similar on Android. And if they were,
it probably is not illegal if you're doing it on Android.
It may not be a violation, but it's certainly a privacy violation.
Yeah.
But it's Facebook has violated the background rules. Like they've had audio, they've abused audio APIs. Battery. Pokemon Go's done the same thing. These super apps, they seem to get away with a lot. Getting called into Tim Cook's office, I mean, that's like the ultimate principal's office for this. And I don't know how you escalate. Can you just ban Uber? And what is the repercussions of that?
So a chat room's given me the link to Uber's terms and conditions. If anybody would like to read this, you might just go right ahead and let me know.
We will do evil and you're saying yes.
What do you have to do as Uber to get in trouble? What does Travis have to do before finally somebody's like, yeah, we send a security guy to your desk with a box. We're going to walk you out at the end of the day. What? Like, I can't figure it out. I don't use Uber for about 96 reasons. I never bothered installing it because I was usually with a group of people whenever there was a need for Uber and somebody else already had it and had it set up and was like a longtime Uber user. So those guys would just hail the car and then we'd go do that. So I don't use it a lot here in Portland. They are here in Portland. I could tell you stories because I know people who drive for Uber. But what do you have to do? They broke all the rules when they came to Portland, when they went to Austin, when they everywhere they go, they just sort of show up and show a blatant disregard for rules and regulations and all that kind of stuff. Like when they show up somewhere and they go, you know, we're so awesome, you're just going to get over it. Number one. Number two, Travis, I don't even have to go any further down that road. We all know what's up there. And then things like God mode and the gray bar or the gray ball and now this with tracking everybody's phone, what do you have to do as Uber to actually get in trouble?
We don't care anymore. We've said that out straight. And we've said this before, a few years ago, a decade ago, you could have one Swiftboat incident and it would end your career. You could make one Tylenol recall and it might almost destroy your brand. And now your phones can burst into flames and we'll buy them again 3 days later because we love you and you can be elected president. I mean, we have a startling lack of care for those things anymore.
No. I don't think that's appropriate.
I think it's absolutely true. No, I think it's absolutely true with our generation. We want instant gratification. We have zero attention span and we sort of almost put people up on pedestals who we see as rule breakers or, you know, getting away with something. It's sort of what we've devolved into.
It depends on whether that's an established pattern of behavior or whether it is a dumb mistake and they can correct for that mistake. It's also, again, putting it this way, it's very, very easy if someone has seven options to solve a different problem to choose the one that is not only the best service, not only the best made, not only shares my values, not only is treating its employees the best, but is also cost efficient and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of people that only have one or two options. Again, I don't like the way that Walmart, for instance, treats its labor. I don't like the way it treats its customers. I do my shopping, my food shopping at a local store. The only thing I need to say about it is that they do not have a single self-service kiosk for checkout. They actually pay actual. No, I'm serious. They pay actual people to they don't. They have people who for 3 or 4 hours are just checking people out. Not you have eight duties, including mopping things up. And if we need to open a physical register, then you have to run to cover that register. However, there are some people for whom the only thing that the difference between Walmart and that shop doing grocery shopping at Walmart and doing grocery shopping at the store I'm talking about is the difference between each of my four kids eating well and being clothed and having shoes without holes on them, and having to choose which one of them has to wear those shoes that have cardboard in the bottom and has to eat the cardboard box that the cereal came in because we ran out of oat hoops for them to eat. So I'm saying that's why I'm saying it's not that simple. So if you have lots of options, you have lots of options. If you don't have many options, again, I'll have to say that. I don't have four or five people living in the house with me. If I have to get a colonoscopy or something, I will probably hire a Lyft. If I can't find a Lyft, I will probably hire an Uber to drive me there, because I don't have options to get myself home under anesthesia or semi anesthesia, where I'm not allowed to drive, that do not involve using a ride sharing service. So again, that's why I stop short of saying we are a culture that doesn't care. We are a culture that, you know, is willing to forget whatever the last transgression was.
So, I mean, and to answer your question, Kelly, I don't think Uber has broken the law yet. And if it does, well, then I think they would be subject to, you know, civil and maybe criminal penalties. I don't think that they're getting away with that. They've broken Apple's law, and they might be in Apple jail. And by the way, here is the Uber privacy policy, and they're very clear. We may collect information about your mobile device, including, for example, the hardware model, operating system and versions, software and file names, versions, preferred language, unique device identifier, advertising identifier, serial number, device motion information, and mobile network information. They say very clearly, we'll collect that. So the law, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is not going to say, well, you're violating your privacy policy. They're very clear. They're breaking Apple's rules.
You have no privacy, but Apple gets upset.
You've agreed by using Uber not to have any privacy. By the way, that was not in the terms of service. This is a separate Uber privacy statement. Information we collect about you from use of our services. And by the way, they say right away, we collect information about you. Lots of it. And here's in the following general categories, we collect information about you.
Well, and I understand that some of that is required, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't collect data. They need to know your name. They need to know where you are. You know, they need to know who they're looking for. They need to have some sort of payment information so that you can pay for the ride at the end of it. Like, I understand that those are things that you need to do. But I sort of get the feeling, like, from here that in general, Uber doesn't have my interests at heart. They have Travis's interests at heart. Yes. And I feel like as a consumer,
yes,
like what I get, like what's good for me when I use any sort of service, whether it's I call Broadway Cab or Rose City Cab Company or whoever, you know, around here, or I call Lyft or Uber, or I call a friend of mine and I go, hey, can you come drive me to the place for the thing because reasons, then like at that point, like what's good for me and what's good for Travis aren't necessarily going to be the same thing. What's good for me and what's good for the cab company aren't always going to be the same thing. But the cab company has been around long enough that there are rules and regulations the cab company must abide by in order for them to exist and for them to be the people who roll up at my house at 4:30 in the morning when I need a ride to the airport.
So, I mean, so the way you put Uber in jail is in customer jail, doing what you did, Kelly, which is boycott them. But Andy's point is well taken. There are many people that can't. You know, when we talked about the United issue, our travel guy, mm-hmm. Johnny Jett, said, yeah, but, you know, as soon as you can only get to a town by flying United, you're going to be flying United again.
Yeah, we only have Uber in Montreal. I use Lyft when I'm not in Montreal. I don't use Uber here because I have a car, but people have to use it here. There's no other choice.
Right.
Yeah.
So you user boycott. I mean, I think clearly Uber's under pressure at this point. And remember, they hired former Attorney General Eric Holder, Arianna Huffington on the board, hired him. His investigation, he's asked for more time. I bet there's a lot to investigate.
Because there's still a line of people outside his door going, have I got a story for you?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't, you know. It's an interesting question. I think you're also right, Renee, that we forgive very easily these days because, well, frankly, I don't know why, maybe thanks to Twitter and the internet, there's a new outrage every week. There's the Delta. Now we're the Delta took
right,
away
I don't
the stroller
have
outrage. Now it's the,
I mean, yeah.
it's the
I don't
Peps,
have time to be mad at Uber anymore.
I got Kendall Jenner to yell at. I mean, you can't.
Well, no, but I think reality TV has also warped, you know, the way we see this as theater. We don't see this as real
There's
life.
There's a lot going on. There's also a 24-hour news cycle that is fed by three, at least 24-hour news channels who have to fill their time. There's all sorts of stuff going on with them that I think if you wanted to lump it in the one big clump, it's that we are now kind of all of us part of the global nervous system. We are willy-nilly jacked in. And when you're part of a global nervous system, you get a lot of information.
You do.
Yeah. So long as it's an open transaction, I think that Uber's day is passing unless it replaces its CEO and proves that its culture has changed significantly. Thank goodness it has a good competition in the form of Lyft that are in many ways, Uber is touching is sticking their tongues into power outlets for Lyft, saying that we definitely we can stick our tongue in that power outlet.
One.
We cannot stick our tongue in that one.
What so about if that they, one?
But you're making an interesting point. Because the way it's structured, I looked into this. The board is set up in such a way. Travis cannot be fired by the board, so he'd have to willingly step down. But I think you're absolutely right. This doesn't go away until the way you handle this is by Arianna Huffington and Jeffrey Holder having a press conference saying Travis Kalanick has agreed that in the interests of this company, he's going to step down and be, you know, the chairman or the advisor. Yep. We're going to have a new CEO, a new regime, and new rules. And we apologize, and we're going to make this, you know, we know you love this service, and we're going to make this company worthy of your trust. And I could see that happening at any given time. But the problem is that if Kalanick doesn't want to step down, he doesn't have to step down.
Well, it happens when shareholders and stakeholders say, "Okay, we're not investing in your company because we like your company. We like the money that we think that we're going to make from your company, and you're screwing it up. So we're saying you need to step down." So right. Basically, they can. That's the public vote, as it is, that allows private companies to be shut down is when the public who is putting up the money says, "Okay, we're out. You're idiots. Goodbye."
Uber's
right,
not
we're not
public...
making the money off of you that we were supposed to. Right. And as soon as that value proposition doesn't exist anymore.
Oops. Lost your audio.
Uh-oh.
There
my back
came
now?
Back. Yeah, it was just
so part of the thing about this that is sort of frustrating to me is that it would be very easy for the establishment to eliminate Uber, more or less. Because what people like about Uber is I open the app and I say, I'm right here and I need a ride to this other place. And then I wait a few minutes and a car shows up. So I know one of the, I don't remember where it was. It was one of the larger cities. And basically what it came down to was hailing in advance like that was against the law, was against some sort of regulation in that city. And that's why Uber was winning, was because they weren't playing by the rules. So if cab companies stepped up and had applications, like if I were willing to swear my allegiance to one cab company here, I could install their app and then I could use that app and hail people. Cause I live in the burbs. I live like outside of downtown Portland. If I lived in downtown Portland, I probably could roll out on the street, raise my hand like people do and hail a cab and get a taxi and it wouldn't be a big deal. But where I live, that's a little more complicated. So for most people, I feel like if cab companies were able to just sort of, for lack of a better adjective, Uber-fy themselves, then if I could open an app and go, I'm here and I need a cab and I need it to the airport and I need it in an hour or I need it in 10 minutes and it were possible to make that happen, I feel like if cab companies went for that, they're already abiding by all the other rules. They're already companies that are here and people who are driving for Uber full time might be enticed to go drive for a cab company instead. And then if that were the case, then the cab companies are winning, and at that point, you know, Uber becomes a lot less attractive option for all these other reasons.
Of course, Uber is not publicly held. It's privately held. However, article today in The Information by Alfred Lee says that in the secondary market, investors have cut the price they're willing to pay by about 15% in recent months, cutting Uber's value to about $50 billion. Dollars. Another broker said they'd seen an uptick in the number of Uber shareholders looking to sell. On the other hand, more buyers in the market looking to scoop up shares. See, the stock market doesn't really care if Travis Kalanick is a
Yeah, but this is another example where they're not digging into their own 401ks Uber to keep the company. They do have investors. They do have venture funds. So basically, now instead of having to deal with lots of shareholders, that I can't imagine how badly Apple could screw up. And even in the mirror version where Tim Cook has a goatee and he's evil, I can't imagine how bad the stock would have to go before people would say you're morally outraged and you want to sell. Great, we'll take that discount. We'll buy all your shares.
VCs are investing in Uber not because of today's business, but because of the future business.
If 23 people were to say, we have given you a lot of money, but because we know that if there's an IPO, we're going to make a huge amount of money, but you are going to, if basically you auger this company into the ground. So this is why we are going to praise your vision as CEO and say that, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry that you want to race yachts competitively instead of continue to run the company. But yes, your butt is on a train, whether it's on a rail or in or inside the car. But to what Kelly said, that that's an excellent point. That's exactly right. I think. I mean, this is one of those cases where capitalism, for all the different ways I can rail against it, it kind of works in the sense there. The reason why I don't use cabs, only in New York City really do I ever actually ride in a cab, is because they just don't work. And they don't do what it says on the box. The number of times where I'm going to be out of the office for 2 weeks, and I don't want to park my car and pay for 2 weeks of parking. I want to take a cab to the airport. The number of times that I have called a week in advance to set up a cab ride that will get me to the airport 3 hours before my flight, and then it's an hour later and they still haven't shown up. And they're not answering the phone. And then a half hour later, I finally get in touch with somebody and they act annoyed because, no, I don't have it here and I can't get you a car for an hour and a half. I don't know why you're bothering me. That's why I'm pretty thrilled that Lyft and Uber are kicking their butts, because the other reason is that in so many markets, the reason why cabs don't work is because the individual taxi medallions that used to be, hey, an independent owner and operator will own a cab and they'll buy a medallion so they can pass all the regulations. No, now the taxi industry has been trying to severely limit and make sure that cities do not get more medallions, because that makes their individual medallion more valuable, and they don't really run a company. They just simply sort of license their access to their medallion, and they're worth hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So this is an industry that desperately needed somebody to kick its butt and make it feel like it's about to lose its house, because you can't simply run a business this way on lack of competition. And also means that sometimes counterintuitively for me, there is such a thing as, if the law does not say that something is illegal, but you have a great idea, go ahead anyway and hope that the law it winds up being as awesome as you think it is. Everybody agrees with you on the awesomeness of your product. And so you can basically get the law on your side when the time comes. Like when Google decided it would be very good if we simply were to scan every single book that exists. We will send trucks. We will spend half a billion dollars building trucks that will go to university libraries and scan everything that they have. And we know the public domain stuff, we can do that. The copyrighted stuff, we don't know, but we think that because all we're going to do is make that content searchable so people can find this book that has the content they want and then buy it, we think that it'll be okay. And that didn't turn out to be the case. But it was good that they decided, okay, the law says that's we don't know what happens if someone does that. We're going to pretend that that's going to work out. We're going to do it because it's an awesome idea. So I'm hoping that Lyft wins and that Uber gets its butt handed to it, because they are now becoming the evil empire instead of the valiant freedom fighters. But the whole story is an example of so many ways where there are no absolutes, at least in my principles. Like, oh, in principle, I think the little guy in capitalism is about to. Well, actually, no, this worked out okay. Oh, okay, well, how about, well, no, it's okay. Okay, fine.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, the second scandal to come out of this Mike Isaac article.
Okay. Before we go, just want a quick plug for Mike Isaac. He really is a very good tech journalist. He's been with Recode. He's been with Wall Street Journal.
Oh, okay.
And so he's not just someone who is right. So he knows what he's doing. If there are things that weren't great in this column, that doesn't mean he's not.
No, it's not. Well, it's not at all. It wasn't great. It's that he didn't. I think he didn't.
He's very knowledgeable about the tech industry. He covers Uber specifically as one of his beats in the New York Times.
I think he insufficiently understood the risk, the severe backlash that as two of his revelations. I mean, hey, this is an article that got a lot of attention, deservedly so.
Right. And he broke the story, and had he changed, I think, two words of it, that I'm sure that I can't speak for him, but I when I write, I can see that later on, that, oh, see, in my head when I was writing this, I understood the big version of this word. I forget that people who don't live in this space 24/7 understand a specific correct.
No, that was correct to take the word tracking out. I think that implied
I'm saying bully to him for breaking a really, really great story. He's one of those bylines that gets my attention because he's really got the beans.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really obviously his intent was to write a story about Travis Kalanick, and it's kind of the complete story of Kalanick, but within it, there were a couple of very interesting things. We're going to go way down to almost the very bottom of the story for our next subject when we return. But first, a word from Drobo. Somebody said, didn't this show used to have a rat hole theme? Yeah, Merlin Mann made a rat hole theme for us. He also made, I think it was him, a Drobo jingle, because Drobo's been a sponsor of this show since practically the very...
Put all of your stuff on a Drobo.
That's it. Drobo, the new 5N2. This is the new network-attached storage device from Drobo. High performance. They've upgraded the processor. They've added 2 gigabit Ethernet ports, so you can do port bonding. You could put SSDs as well as spinning hard drives in there. Of course, they've got the mSATA accelerator bay. All the Drobos have that, I think. I love that. That speeds up small file writes with a kind of a caching SSD. You also get remote data access and sharing. That's what you were talking about, Andy. Plus disaster recovery for additional peace of mind. Drobo started when its founder had a hard drive crash, and he said, oh, no problem, I've got RAID. RAID! And the RAID didn't work, and he said, what? He wanted to create a better redundant storage solution, and that's when Drobo created Beyond RAID. And we all remember those great days when Drobo was kind of like data robotics. They were like, wow, look how big these drives are. They were USB drives. Now Drobo's got every kind of drive, from drive arrays using Beyond RAID to network drives like the 5N2. And I have a Drobo Mini. You see that right here. I love my Mini because I use that as my data drive on my iMac. So I have so much storage. It's redundant. It's SSDs, so it's fast. I love my Drobo. You will love your Drobo too. Plus, all Drobos have a battery backed up cache, which means if the power goes out, you don't have data corruption. There's no write failure. It finishes the job. Drobos are easy to use. That front panel with the lights, that's magnetic. You can pop it off. The lights tell the whole story. They're green if everything's good. When you start to run out of space, the lights will change so you know which drive to swap out, and they hot swap. The new 5N2 has these great Drobo apps, which include Drobo Pix for photo backup, Plex, yes, for media streaming, cloud apps for backup and data syncing, developer tools, too, for programmers, websites. There's a complete LAMP stack. There's Node.js, WordPress. You can work in C, Go, Perl, Python, or Ruby. There's even a Git client. The 5N2 is awesome. They're all awesome. And here's the deal. Go to drobostore.com. Check out the complete line of products and save 10%. Actually, they just lowered the prices. You're going to save more than 10%. Prices have been lowered, and you can add an additional 10% off on a select Drobo models, including the 5N2. At drobostore.com when you use the offer code TWIT10. Oh, I like this, the disaster recovery bundle. You get 2 5N2s syncing. One, maybe have one at work, one at home. Just some really great products from Drobo. Drobostore.com. Don't forget TWIT10 for 10% off your new Drobo. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com is here. the new Yellow Eye More. The new app is
Go
out.
Yellow.
Go Yellow.
And, Go Yellow. So all the time.
And you had Florence Ion do your Galaxy S8 review, shocking everybody.
You weren't expecting that, I bet, right?
No, I wasn't expecting that.
She knocked it out the park, too. What a terrific
She did.
Review.
She did. Yeah. We had her on the new Screensavers on Saturday. We both talked a lot about the Galaxy S8. I'll tell you, I'm a little disappointed. I don't know. I mean, this isn't the show for it, but it ain't the God phone it was supposed to be. I'll tell you that.
It's hard, Leo. It's hard now. It's going to be hard for anybody at this point. It's just such a mature technology, and we've seen so much. It's
yeah.
Well, and I think the next big revolution to surprise us again.
Oh, it was Jeff Smith that did that jingle, by the way, the Drobo jingle. Thank you, Jeff Smith. Thank you, Virgil, for telling me. I think though it does set the tone for what the next Apple iPhone will be, because bezel-less. That's going to be everybody's going to do that. Where this, I mean,
LG and Samsung are major Apple suppliers, and if you look at what they're producing exactly. this year, that's yeah. what Apple.
Yeah,
I mean,
Apple bought 100 million of these OLED screens. You can now. Do you think Apple will do the tall thing? Because that's one thing that's weird about the S8, the aspect ratio. It's not
one of the rumors is they're going to have almost a Palm WebOS-esque command, like touch bar, basically underneath the screen, which will help them make it narrower and taller because there'll be dedicated control. Pixels at the bottom.
Narrower means you can hold it in one hand.
Yes.
Which is important, I think.
It's awkwardly stated on the back of the Samsung box, so I'm not going to read it out for the children in the audience, but yes, it does.
Really?
Yeah, the marketing on the back, the way they describe the length and girth of that phone is very, very odd.
I missed that. I have to get my box back out.
It's all over Reddit. It's amazing.
Oh, that's hysterical.
But I think it makes a lot of sense for the reason you said that when, like, the BlackBerry Passport was ridiculous, but any phone that's sufficiently wide, some of the Nexuses have been very wide too. It makes one-handed use, and it makes even single-handed use for people who don't have gargantuan basketball mitts.
After having the Nexus 6, which is a 6-inch screen, I thought, oh, that's too big because it was wide and you could barely hold it. Yeah, unless you had basketball hands. And I was mistaken because this is a 6.2-inch screen, but it's the same width as an iPhone 7 Plus.
Like
it's just like the iPhone 5 where they had one extra icon row. It's exactly that. You got this, an extra row, room for extra row of icons at the top. I don't know. Well, it'd be very interesting. It's a weird aspect ratio. It's 18.5:9.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Apple not only, I think they're going to put in that big screen because if any company can just make great hay with a huger screen on a smaller form factor, it's Apple. But I'm also looking forward to seeing what tweaks they add to it to make it
right.
easier for one-handed use. Samsung does something where you can enable a mode where you can basically basically create a virtual screen of a smaller size, like the size of an iPhone 4 screen, so that it really is all in the left-hand corner or the right-hand corner and reachable with one thumb. But it's nice, but I'm wondering if Apple will do something that's even more elegant. They have the double tap on the home button to scrunch the top of the screen down to the bottom of the screen. But that's an area where Apple can really excel. Give us that really beautiful large screen, but also make it so that we don't want to hire somebody to follow us around, just offer us another finger for the top of the screen when we need it.
Well, actually, you know what? Let us go to iPhone as a little intermezzo, a refresher, a little palate cleanser before we get to the next scandal from Uber.
It's like, let's cleanse the palate of our hate of bad CEOs. We're gonna rinse out with an iPhone Lavoris, and then
oh Lord. So one of the rumors which we poo pooed last week, but I'll give you another chance to address it, is that because of challenges getting the way Samsung handled the fingerprint reader, because you don't have a home button anymore, a physical home button, is they put it on the back like everybody else does. But Samsung did a terrible job the way they put it. And the shape it is, it's just very hard to find, and you always end up.
That was a fallback too. They wanted it under the glass, they just couldn't do it.
So apparently, Apple wants it under the glass, but are they going to have trouble? Do you think?
It's different technology. I mean, they're using the similar display. I mean, Samsung, I believe, is supplying. There's a bunch of suppliers, but the Apple has its own Authentic technology that it bought. When it bought the company,
it's not using the Synaptics fingerprint reader.
But it's getting a camera underneath the display that can reliably, because if it can't reliably read fingerprints, it's a deal breaker.
Do you think they're going crazy working really hard right now, staying up all night trying desperately to get that working?
I mean, this stuff is locked. Like, a lot of the stuff gets locked down early on. So, I mean, they probably have a very good idea of where they can go at this point. It might be down to a couple prototypes or variations, but they've got to get their ducks lined up.
Even if you're an iPhone person and you say, I'm going to be using an iPhone as soon as the new one comes out, it's worth playing with this Galaxy S8 Plus because I think that that is a really interesting pointer to where Apple might be going.
The LG too, which is very similar, but came out with not much publicity. Yeah,
yeah. The G6 is quite good. I like the G6. Yeah, yeah. And it does what Apple does. It was LG that invented this with the dual cameras.
The great thing about even if you have no intention of switching from one platform to another, it will help you to not only give you ambitions onto what an iPhone can do better or a Mac can do better, it'll also really make you appreciate stuff that is brilliant about an Apple product that you've kind of forgotten about because you've been using Apple products for years and years and years and years, because it's easy to become jaded. In most parts of America, we take clean water for granted. During the commercial, I went back to the kitchen sink. I poured myself another liter of fresh, cool, clean water.
Nice.
And I didn't even think about it. But you go to other countries where, no, that means having to walk about 3/4 of a mile at the right time of day and filling up a can. That, I think as Apple users, sometimes we forget how great the things about an iPhone that are great, that are uniquely iPhone, the things about a Mac that are great, that are uniquely Mac. So that's why I always recommend, if you're at the mall, check out the Microsoft store, usually a Microsoft kiosk near the Sunglass Hut. But try out a Surface Pro, and you'll probably see two things that you wish the Mac did or the iPhone did, and three or four things that said, oh my God, how do people live like this? It'll make you go back even better.
I am sure there are Apple engineers carrying Samsung Galaxy S8, so they're trying this.
I heard you say something, but I didn't hear any noise come out.
Well, okay. Can you hear me now?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Since we're talking about phones, I can say that, right? Okay. So the thing to me that's sort of interesting about this is also seeing the direction that some things take on Android. There are some things that are very interesting and very useful to me when I've looked at Android phones. And one of the things that, I've said this for years in some form or another, and that's I want the other one to be great. Whatever it is, like with iOS, I always want Android to do something cool and awesome. And on macOS, I always want Windows to do something cool and awesome because I want Apple to have to compete instead of sitting around and getting to go, you know, what would be great would be if we were able to make it so that there was a fingerprint sensor in the button on the front. And then that would let you unlock your phone instead of having to type that passcode all the time. Like instead of sitting around and getting to sort of spitball stuff like that, like instead, they have to compete. Like Android did this cool, awesome thing. We have to find our take on it. And that's one of the reasons that I was on Andy's podcast not too long ago asking about an Android tablet because I want to see what Android's doing. I want to find out what it's up to. I want to see what that stuff looks like because I feel like they see things in iOS that end up getting an Android take. And I feel like there's also things in Android that you will end up seeing an Apple's take on in future versions of iOS. And so I'm always interested in what the other guy is doing, and I always want it to be great. I don't want it to be terrible. Everybody has a preference, and I want it to be something that's cool and awesome because watching Apple compete is super fun for me, and I enjoy getting to see what they do when they really have, a worthy opponent, as it were. So that's the thing that I really like about getting to see the Android phones. But my problem now is that not one of these phones will fit in my pocket because I'm a woman and I wear women's jeans, and it drives me up a wall, and it's driven me up a wall since I got an iPhone 5 and the 5 poked out the top of my side pocket, my front pocket in my pants. I don't carry it in my back pocket because that way lies madness and probably broken phones. So I put it in my front pocket of my pants and then it doesn't fit there. And so like I keep threatening to start a website where I just take my phone and put it in pockets and see which pants it fits and which pants it doesn't fit.
Because
I'm that person.
Velcro.
No, I think a lot of people would be interested, and I would really love to see you try the S8 because I feel like, first of all, it's slippery as hell. So this thing is pre-lubricated for your convenience. And then I think it would just slide right in because look how narrow it is. Of course, it's not.
Yeah, but I have wee tiny Japanese schoolgirl hands.
I know. I want to, like, if I could push this through the screen, I would, so you could try it because I really be curious.
But it won't fit. I know it won't fit because girls have, because even though these are my teeny weeny little hands, like, they don't fit entirely into the pockets of my jeans.
it's a weird cultural thing too, because there's a lot of societies where people in general are much smaller than the McDonald's fed culture we have here, and they want the biggest screen they can because it becomes their primary computer. They don't have a Mac or a
right.
PC, and it's the only
different interface. Issues, yeah.
So you can make a 12, you can make it a 12-inch one, and they'd be like, yes, please, another
right.
three.
Right.
And like, and I know that there's a market for people who want the giant screen, and I understand those people. I'm not those people. But I understand the need for that. I'm not going to be one of those like tech people who goes, well, if it's not for me, it's obviously not for anybody. Cause I know that's not true. But for me, like I carry my phone in my front pocket because that's where my phone is supposed to be. That way it's against my leg. If something goes off, if I need to get a hold of it, it's right there. And you know, that's why I never got a plus in the six plus and the S plus.
Yeah,
and
this
seven
is the
plus.
Same size like, as the plus, actually. It's very
yeah,
close.
I would yeah. never, I would never that. Ever get one of those. I get people who do because they have whatever it is that they're doing with it that bigger screen or that particular camera is really great for. But this, you know, even just the regular size six, you know, the one that I have, like that's, it's super frustrating that I can't comfortably leave it in the pocket of my pants all day long. I wear jeans for the most part. Doesn't matter what kind of jeans. I know people are going to start like trying to help tech support on my pants. But
the Levi's, Kenny. The Levi's will easily.
Right? No, and Levi's won't either. And I know why they're smaller, and that doesn't make it any better. And I just want something that will fit in the pocket of my jeans where my phone, I feel, is supposed to go.
You get the watch. The phone stays back home, and the watch is just your interface to everything. And then you get the AirPod, and the AirPod does everything, so you don't have to bring your watch with you. And then the implant arrives, and you just never have to carry anything ever again. This is how they get us there.
Okay, so, when I get there, then I will stop complaining about the size of the pockets in women's pants.
That implant is too big for my neck.
How do you feel about the fingerprint reader on the back? Do you think Apple? A lot of people are saying that, and the chat room is saying this too.
Love it. I love it.
Yeah,
love it.
I personally love it.
People love it.
There are disadvantages if it's in a stand or if it's lying on the table. You have to pick it up to do it. On the other hand, it's a very natural to read. I mean, not for the Samsung because it's in the wrong spot. But if it's in the place where, for instance, Google and LG put it, it's just very natural to put your finger right there. So
even out of the case, there's a. Let me take this out of the case. This is last year's. This is the
are
last.
Are you fondling the camera
phone.
A lot, Leo?
But there's there is even out of the case, there is like a really natural indent that as I'm taking this out of my pocket, my finger just happens to go there, and it just happens to be unlocked when I turn it around. Not only that, so I think that's the best place for it. I think that's something I would love Apple to steal. And the other thing is that. Recently, they added a feature to Android where you can use the fingerprint reader even when it's unlocked. So if you just simply swipe like this, that will drop down your notifications and scroll through them. So if this were not just for dropping down notifications, which is just awesome, if it were also this is we will accept stroking down on the fingerprint reader on the back as a
don't use your tongue
down for scrolling. Right. So I'm reading something that's going to take me 5 minutes to get through at the bus stop or something, and I could just simply go like this instead of whoop. That would be such a great innovation. That'd be such a great thing to put on the iPhone. I think if anybody is afraid that this is the wrong place for it, the Samsung put it in the wrong place because they made it a small little tic-tac and they put it right next to the camera lens. So you're always going to be greasing up the lens.
They actually had to put software that checks the state of the camera lens and warns you to clean it.
Yeah.
There's a pop-up. There's a pop-up on here that says, oh, yeah, you better clean your
I swallowed the bird to catch the fly. I don't know why I swallowed
Well, and that's the cascade you're talking about where you did this, so you had to do that, so you had to do this. And it's an endless parade. There are a lot of Apple users who, including
they
Kelly.
They got so angry, Leo.
Who don't want a fingerprint reader on the back. So if Apple can't put it on the front, which is better, putting it on the back or doing face recognition, iris recognition, some form of on-screen recognition, or a fingerprint dongle?
A dongle. That's the solution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Apple's a company that says that, you know, we find that people only use four of their fingers. So your Apple retailer will remove this finger, put in an NFC chip to replace it with. But I'm sure it'll go. I think it's a great place for it. I think that if past history shows us anything, is going to be that if this becomes an actual rumor, there are going to be 4 months of people saying, oh, this is stupid. This is exactly why Android developers have no taste and Apple wouldn't do that. And then 3 months after Apple does it, it's like, thank you, Apple, for finally putting the fingerprint reader on the right place. No, they didn't do it first, but they did it right. See, they care about the fine. Like, oh, for heaven's sake. It's
Apple
okay
has
to
revolutionized the fingerprint reader on the back.
It's
but today, Apple invents the fingerprint reader on the back.
For me, the problem is again, the size of the phone, because it needs to be in a place where this hand can find that easily on the back. And, you know, a standard issue adult male size hand can also find it on the back, because like everybody has bigger hands than I do. So it's, to me, it seems like a really tough nut to crack. One of the nice things about having it on the front is whether you're a person who holds your phone in one hand and operates it with the other, or whether you're the pinky perch person with, and you do everything with your thumb so that it's all one handed, what, you know, whether it's your right hand or your left hand, you know, if you're me, you're doing it left handed. It's still a thing that works to have it in the center on the front, you know, near the bottom. And so, you know, well, what you do is you just, you know, register your thumbs there, and then whichever hand you pick it up with, there's your thumb. And it seems like that was a really, to me, that was a really good way to solve that problem. And so it doesn't matter whether I'm right-handed or left-handed, or I have big hands or I have small hands. That's a place that everybody can pretty reliably hit. And on the back, I don't know how you find that sweet spot.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Apple's got
to
solve this.
There are good and bad implementation. To me, it's an implementation thing. You can do it well and you can do it badly. And I just hope if they do it, they do it well.
They're Apple. They'll do it well. But the problem
is, some people want it in the logo, but the logo's a bit high up on a 7 Plus.
Like, it will. I have to predict it's going to be where Google and LG have put it, because that's just really an HTC. No, HTC didn't do that. HTC put it on the front. I think the future is clearly bezel-less phones, no physical home button, and a fingerprint reader on the back. But,
and you squeeze them instead of having side buttons.
There is a phone, the new HTC, apparently you squeeze. I don't.
Yeah.
give your
delete
phone
everything.
Licking it is still kind of weird.
It de-stresses
Leo,
you,
licking
Andy.
It is actually, I'm going to confess, doing what you were talking about, Andy. There's a swipe down on the fingerprint reader that pulls down the notifications, and the swipe
folks,
up
go
opens
watch
Samsung
from this weekend.
Pay.
Please.
So
go
I'm really this. Just, it's just a, it's a, I'm David Blaine, and this is my, or whoever the guy is. Chris, I'm just
Chris
doing
Angel.
Chris Angel. It's just a Chris Angel trick. Wow. When I lick my phone, my charge card comes up.
Oh, we've broken it.
No.
Oh, there we go.
The fingerprint sensors taste like snozzberries. Go ahead, try it.
It's a cheap trick.
Now, is the software telling you to clean your camera now, Leo?
Yeah, probably.
You know, win a tour of Apple's mysterious new spaceship factory. Only 7 winners for 7 golden iPhones.
Speaking of which, I think we've achieved camera phone parity in the high-end phones, right? The Pixel and
in our time, in our lifetimes, Leo.
Parity in our time. Will Apple now jump ahead of the other guys? And what can they do to jump ahead of the other guys?
Computational photography, not just putting more lenses in. Where we saw the start of it, where it's just as simple as, hey, great, we have telephoto and we have normal, but also calculating in between. Now I can't remember the name of it, but there's a really experimental camera that I think it crowdfunded as a. It looks like a big, thick phone, but it looks like some sort of spider in microphotography. It has something like 16 little lenses on it of different focal lengths, different characteristics, because when you press the one shutter button, it is first deciding which of these lenses is going to be most useful, fires off a number of them simultaneously, and then computationally builds a super high resolution, super high exposure contrast range picture from these things. So I really think that that's what Apple is going to do. They're going to be the company that says there are 4 lenses, just like they were very smart last year to say, when I was doing my review, I was talking to Apple directly. And they're making it very, very clear that we don't think of it as a telephoto lens and a wide-angle lens. It is the camera system. And you're not meant to wonder or worry about which lens is primarily being used, because we're going to take as much information as we can. That's where they can really do it. Every single camera that's doing exciting things is tricking us into thinking that this is a full-frame $3,000 camera. But no, it's a tiny, tiny little sensor, but there are like 5 of them, and each one of them does one thing really well. So, but it's not about making better pictures so much as solving the problem of those little edge cases that a phone camera still doesn't do well. So if I go into Copley Square in a really sunny day, I've done this before. I kind of had to stop doing it because the high-end cameras are so the high-end phones are so similar now. But on a sunny day, take the same stock picture of the Boston Public Library and the Old South Church, the carousel in the background. You can't tell the difference between five of these because it's a beautiful picture. But it's when you go inside the Boston Public Library and you're going into this really medieval lit room full of colorful murals, that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's where we're going to see improvements. Not in the test stand pictures, but oh my god, I'm so used to getting really crappy photos of my friends at parties and darkly lit with pulsating lights in the background. I'm used to I posted a picture on Instagram. I was wearing like my NASA meatball shirt from Goddard Space Center, but it's like a canary red shirt, and no phone camera can get that red. It's always a pink or a salmon. I had to go and take it into Lightroom to make it look red because you're just firing off one third of your sensors just at full volume. Those edge cases are going to start to fall away, and it's going to be which camera is fastest, which camera is easiest to use, which camera is I simply push the button, I get a great picture under all circumstances. And that's a fight that Apple can definitely win. So my favorite
phone camera. That's funny. Andy's yardstick is the Boston Public Library, and my yardstick is Disneyland.
Okay, fair enough.
Because no flash photography. And so when you don't use a flash and you're inside, you know, like when you want a really great shot of something in Pirates of the Caribbean, something in It's a Small World, whatever, you know, not all of it is like super overly lit. It's sort of, you know, classroom on a day you have a film strip sort of lit. And so when you're in there, like I end up taking the same pictures like every time we go on different rides at Disneyland. Every time I get a new phone, because I'm curious how they have evolved. And so, like, the first pictures I got, like, with my iPhone 3G at Disneyland of Pirates of the Caribbean are crap. Like, I'm not going to lie. They were awesome. It was awesome I was able to take that picture with the phone, but it was not an awesome picture. Not by any stretch of the imagination. And they got better and they got better and they got better. And, like, the ones that I got with my 6S, the most recent time we went to Disneyland, were decent. They were pretty good. I don't have a plus, so I don't have the super duper camera, but I have a pretty good camera and I enjoy that. I think the evolution in cameras isn't necessarily even going to be the sensor. I think it's probably going to be the control. I remember Andy, I think it was you ages ago, who said, if I could have the Android controls with the iPhone camera, like I'd be unstoppable. And I still feel like that's kind of the case. There should be better from the OS, not I'm going to go use Camera Plus. You know, I have to launch Camera Plus instead of just using the camera app or whatever. Having better control of what the camera, of the picture the camera is actually going to take, seems like where the evolution is going to come from. Like better use of the data that what's already in there can already capture.
Yeah, I think there's going to be three things, too, that are really, like, I think Apple's going to show off the screen, and it'll be the same screen technology, but I think Apple and Google, for that matter, have way better color management than Samsung offers, and you won't have to do a lot of manually changing profiles. They're going to individually calibrate every subpixel of every device right at the factory floor, so it's going to look really, really good as OLED, and I'm sure they're going to tout, the strengths of the display, and then they'll do the photography, like Andy mentioned, and then they'll, if it's ready and it's working, they'll do the distance charging. I think when people see you just putting your phone down on the table and it charging without you having to worry about plugging anything in or putting it on anything magnetic, whether people end up liking that more or not, it'll make for a great demo on stage.
One thing we do know, or we think we know, or we might know, Apple's next iPhone may be wireless. Not that they invented it, but it will be the best wireless phone ever. The CEO of
reinvented.
reinvented. The CEO of PowerMat says yes. And PowerMat makes, by the way, a charger that is not the cheap charging standard, but the other standard, the PowerMat standard. He says, yes, it'll be a standard feature in the next iPhone. And I presume that he would know. Elad Dubzinski said wireless charging would be a standard feature in the next iPhone. He may never again be invited to an Apple event. If you know, Elad, if you want to hang out with me, that's okay. So interesting.
Yeah, and I've learned a little bit more since the last time we talked about a month or two ago. When we talk about like what Renee is saying, where you don't have to put it on a pad, even if it has multiple charging coils on it, that doesn't mean like a Tesla type tower in your backyard pulsating, cooking birds in the air. But that would be cool. Again, going to your backyard, just picking up squirrels and birds, and saying, just, okay, all I got to do is take the fur off, and it's already fried. Great, breakfast is taken care of. But basically, like imagine having like a little like sculptured dome nightlight on your nightstand, and so long as it is somewhere within 6 inches of it, you will get charged. That's very, very doable, and that might be interesting. It's
not going to happen, Andy. That scares the hell out of people. People don't even think Wi-Fi is a good idea. Oh, I've got a dome that is somehow emitting energy that I just put my phone near it. What else do I put near it? Will scramble my eggs?
Peanut butter sandwich.
People are not going to go for that.
I use the word without malice. People will fall for a really great demo. Renee raised a point that kind of made me start wondering for the first time. I don't think that Apple is tacky enough to choose a feature just because it will demo well. Like if you watch Shark Tank, you know that they're all saying this will demo great on the home shopping channel. That's what we're looking for, a good demoable product. But if there is if we add this new coprocessor, we find that we can increase Wi-Fi bandwidth up to 20 to maybe even 28% versus here is an LED light that lets you know when your ex-wife or ex-husband or child is doing something you don't approve of somewhere on social media. It's like, that looks cool. Wow, that's cool.
It's not like, it's solving a problem that isn't a big problem. I like wireless chargers, but the current wireless chargers are just fine. In fact, I do prefer wireless because it's just easy at night. You just put your phone in, but I have a little easel. You just put your phone in and it charges. It's not like I need something that's broadcasting energy through the room, and I have a feeling that that will be a negative, not a positive.
It means you don't have to put this
in the little stand. It just
exactly. I get it wrong all the time, Leo.
Well, you got to get one of these lift stands. There are bad and good wireless chargers.
I know, but I've like turned over and knocked it with the duvet cover, and then it gets dislodged, and then I wake up and it's not charged.
You could still knock it away from the magic dome.
You could say the same thing about the magnetic charger on the Apple Watch. I mean,
I've done it with plugged in chargers and not turned the power bar on. I mean, I have ways of messing up any technology.
Yeah.
You know, I think that maybe Renee is
projecting. Renee's in the wrong line of work.
We can't prevent Renee from screwing everything up. I mean, there's no
QA engineer call me. I mean,
yes,
I will show you why your product fails.
Yes.
This is what I use. I use the View charger.
The Renee test. Now we know why we always see so many Instagrams of your watch. You're flying to Cupertino. You don't have these insider briefings. You're not visiting friends. They're like, we think that no idiot could possibly.
It was idiot proof, but it wasn't Renee proof.
God dang it! We shouldn't have invited Renee.
This is a Qi charger, and you just put your phone in it. It's very easy. You're not going to get it wrong. In fact, unless you have it, right next to you, you're not going to probably knock it off. And it charges. And that's, marginally easier than plugging in the connector. Although now with lightning and wireless, lightning and Type-C connectors is easy enough. But, I don't really see a need for a dome that's spitting out energy a little farther. I don't see
that you didn't know you wanted it until they made it, Leo. That's the
point. I don't want it. Also, I know it right
now.
You
didn't know you wanted it.
This would be a doodad that people can see that has been designed by the Apple design team. It could just look cool.
Oh, you don't have one, Leo? You don't have a wireless charger? Oh, you've got one.
There's no way I'm sleeping with you. I said good day, sir. Slam.
Okay.
You still plug in a cord like a caveman?
You have to touch your charger like an animal?
I will wait and see what they offer. And, if it's really cool, maybe I'll...
Recharging device is just an edge case. Apple can't make every single customer happy.
I understand.
Do you think these are for people who like to buy new phones every day? Lightning charging, or do you think it's just that they're going to go to USB-C so that everything's USB-C all the time?
I wish they would, but I think we've all agreed. You weren't here, Kelly, but I think we've all agreed that that would be crazy.
Until USB Mini is a thing, and then we'll have to change again.
It'll be crazy. I mean, Lightning is only five, 6 years old, and that was such a painful transition. I can't imagine Apple going...
Oh, it was. not. Everybody just complained because they'd had 10 years to go buy monoprice 30 pin cables.
No, but yeah, when they launched it, they did not have adapters ready, and that was just horrible. Like they, if you're going to change something, you owe
also every time I go to a hotel room, it's got a 30 pin connector. Hotels don't want to buy new clocks every few years.
It's okay, your iPod dock in a porch. Enjoy.
I feel as likely to dock my phone in a hotel dock as I would be to use a toothbrush that I found.
By the
there
way,
on the
a good case for wireless charging, right?
One would hope, but I'm just curious because it seems like if they were going to change the charging, that to me feels like where it would go, because then this would be a way. It would be lengthy, but it would be a good way to sort of do customers a solid. Like, you bought that new computer that uses USB-C already.
Yeah.
So we're just going to do you a solid and you can use the same cord to charge your phone.
I have a USB condom in here somewhere. Hold on a second.
All the MacBook Pro customers be like, you USB-C'd me to death,
Apple. This is a USB condom, Andy. You got to get one of these. What this is it does two things, which is really interesting. So it's charging only, right? So you're absolutely right. In fact, we should say this more often, Andy. Do not plug your USB stuff into unknown holes, because
do not be poor promiscuous.
It's really a good way to get hacked. If you find a USB key on the ground, don't pick it up and stick it in your computer. That's a terrible idea. But this is a charging only connector. They're only a few bucks. It's called PortaPow, PortaPow. But it also does something else, which is it will take a regular charger and step it up to a high-speed charger somehow. There's obviously circuitry in here. Steve Gibson sent me this.
Coil.
It's a coil.
Yeah, there's something going on.
You put a plastic sheet down before you use someone else's charger?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The PortaPow Smart Charge. So it will speed up your device charging if it can, and it will also protect you against bad stuff coming through the data ports on the USB. It only does charging.
Not an Audi.
It's a type A, so you'd have to have a cable with a type A on one end, not a type C on one end.
Or as most people call them, the regular USB
cable. The normal. It's the normal.
USB, micro USB, mini USB.
Ming Chi Kuo. How about that? He says iPhone 8 is going to have severe shortages due to delayed production. It'll be announced in September, but you may not be able to get it till much later. Partly because it's OLED. And we're talking about if the rumor mill is true, the high-end flagship one. There's apparently going to be a 7S and a 7S Plus, and then this new Magic iPhone that you'll want, but you won't be able to get to.
The new AirPods? Is that what he said?
Yeah, it's the new AirPods. He says...
The new Nintendo Mini.
Yeah.
NES Classic.
Which is now discontinued, so I hope you got one.
But not canceled, yeah.
Yeah.
Nope,
We didn't make near enough of them, and everyone bought them and loved them. We should stop.
Let's cancel it.
You can't get a unicorn frap, and you can't get a Nintendo Classic. Take that, America.
Take that, America. So, interesting. Ming-Chi Kuo has mixed results, I think, in his projections.
He's probably the most reliable of the financial analysts.
And he's the one that knows the supply chain the best, right? Yes. So his stuff is best when it's supply chain, because he's in China.
Yep.
He says production ramp-up of OLED iPhone could be delayed to October, November. Production ramp-up, which means it would be even after that before they'd come in any quantity into the U.S. That said, if new features such as 3D sensing can provide good user experience, a temporary supply shortfall won't undermine actual demand, which may be deferred to 1H18. Can you translate that into financial?
First half of 2018.
In that case, potential contributions starting, and again, because he's a financial analyst, when he talks about Q2 2017, he's actually talking about January through March, right? 2018. Apple, it's very confusing. So he says OLED iPhones delayed 3 to 6 months because of supply constraints. So don't get all excited about this magic.
So hard. Can I speak first? I want to beat Rene to the most sensible thing that I know he's going to say, which is you can't say something's going to be delayed if it hasn't been announced yet, with even a ship date. Okay, right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a good point.
No, I was just going to say also that a lot of Apple thought the AirPods were going to ship on time and they got a surprise there. So I mean, even if right now he heard that they were on time, I still would not believe they're on time until I'm holding it in my hand.
Yeah,
that's just how these things work these days.
Well, and doesn't this seem like a safe bet, though, to say that they're going to announce a new thing and that it's going to be hard to come by? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't we seen that with, let me see, all of them?
Anything that pushes the boundaries, like Apple Pencil, like AirPods, when Apple does something that's really hard, it's very difficult to judge the timing of it accurately.
Well, and you know, Google has set a new standard because we're 6 months into the Pixel and you still can't get one of those.
They're at customs behind the AirPods. I figured it out. They're at the bar at the airport waiting on customs. The AirPods are delaying them. They can't get through.
It's crazy. We live in a new world where people want to buy stuff, but there's just not enough of them.
But isn't there like sort of a lack of dignity to it? I really did want like an NES Classic because, you know, that's the circumstance under which I will have a game console. They're kind of old. It's not going to be take over my life for 3 weeks at a time. And it's 60, 70 bucks. Great. I can spend that on some fun. But it's like there's a certain amount of lack of dignity of I'm going to have to wait in the rain for 6 hours because I heard a rumor on Tumblr that maybe this store is going to be restocked this day. It's like, oh, please let me give you money for a product or service. It's like, my dignity is not worth a whole lot of money, but sometimes I do make that choice that maybe I will live without an NES Classic if it means that I can figure out that no, I did not have to beg, please take my money. Oh my God, I'm so lucky I got to buy this thing and other people didn't get to buy this thing.
It's like, funny though.
Wait a minute.
I mean, like
this is wrong.
The Pixel is sort of BS. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it was a very last-minute phone that I don't think they could source properly. I just don't – given how much Apple and Samsung and LG suck out of the supply system, I just don't think they had the resources to make the phone they wanted as fast as they wanted when their initial plans fell apart. And I think the other stuff, like Apple changed the tip of the pencil and it became hard to supply. The AirPods, one analyst said the chip in there is incredibly powerful compared to even smartphones from a few years ago. And just getting those chips and sensors in there turned out to be super hard. And getting the distance charging and the screen in here and the Touch ID working I think is going to prove super hard. And you either need a lot of time or you need a lot of preparation, and sometimes those things don't work out.
Right.
Yeah, but it is a little worrisome though, because Apple isn't a Kickstarter startup that's surprised at how long it takes to ramp up manufacturing. At this point, this is something we hear about almost every single year. That no, you cannot get the 64 gigabyte phone because we don't have, but we can give you the 4 gigabyte phone because we have plenty of those. But that's it.
Yeah.
It's like you at some point,
it's
how
Touch
many
ID
failures
one year?
How many failures in a row do you have to have before people who like your company are correct to say that either A, you got a serious problem in how you do your math and the stuff. You do not have the ability to anticipate how much people are going to need things when other companies seemingly can handle this, or that B, I don't think it's part of their strategy to create marketing hype because that's not as valuable as the actual cash that people have in their hands to give you. But saying that we believe that we're willing to sacrifice a certain number of sales if it means that we never, ever, ever have stock on hand that we don't know what to do with. So,
or you drop features like Samsung, you move it to the back of the phone and you ship now. But are they willing to do that? Because then people go, oh, God, why didn't they just wait until they could do it right?
Yeah, but that's another good discussion. I'm sorry, Kelly. I'll shut up quickly. That's another good question that I would rather have a product that is somewhat imperfect, but the other 97% of it works great than, okay, well, I've been waiting for 6 months to try to buy this. I still can't get it. I'm just going to give up and continue to use my year-old product that has nothing this thing has, but at least I'm going to wait. Anyway,
is a touch bar.
I'm sorry, Kelly. Go ahead.
Well, no, that's fine. So, first of all, I only disagree with you, Andy, in that I feel like Apple, because we see this every year, they talk about how we made X million more phones this year than last year, and we sold every single one of them, and there's a huge demand, there's a huge wait list. I think, like, from here, it seems like the problem is zero day. Everybody wants one the day it's out, and nobody can wait until Tuesday or next week or the beginning of October instead of the beginning of September. Nobody wants to wait till Thanksgiving for their phone. Like, somehow they feel as though they have lost and must question all of the choices that led them to this point as an adult, I guess. And I feel like that is the thing that's hanging everything up, because you see, you know, in capital P people, like the masses at large, like you will see people who got a phone after the announcement of the new phone. You know, like they announced the sevens and people went out a week later and got a 6S and were just like, fetch me my fainting couch. I'm so pleased with the amazing technology in my phone. And they are absolutely 100% fine with that. And yep. That's the deal. And I think for me, what it is 0 day. Like when I got my 6S, I went on and ordered at midnight and like Friday was the day that everybody was supposed to get them. And I got mine Saturday. And you know what? I still managed to live a full and productive life. And yep. I feel like there's a certain amount of that is a problem, because one of the things that I think doesn't always get enough attention from Apple is the supply chain stuff, not because people want to tell us what's in the next iPhone, but because Apple makes more and more and more and more and more phones every summer. They make more of them and they sell all of them. And there's nothing like, to me, that sounds like a good problem to have, but it seems like it's somehow considered a failing that Apple can't estimate how many people are going to want that phone. But let's be honest, basically everybody who has an iPhone now wants the new one. And now that it has gotten easier for people to obtain a new one every 12 months instead of every 24 or even 36, that's even more compelling. And even more people are now able to get them every September or every October or whatever and stand in that line in the mall and, you know, confuse my parents when we go shopping. And so it's sort of, to me, I think it's a thing that sometimes Apple doesn't get enough credit for. I don't think they get enough credit for battery technology and how that has evolved over time on their watch. And I also think they don't get enough credit for manufacturing, because like every year they tell us we made so many millions more phones than last time. And even if you just take that gap, here's how many more we made this year than we made last year. That if you could take any other cell phone company and say, you're going to sell this many phones in a quarter, not just in a weekend, but in a quarter, like the other ones would faint with glee at what sort of sales numbers that would be for them. And I feel like sometimes that doesn't always get the attention that it should, because everybody wants to talk about what somebody heard from their best friend's cousin's brother's boyfriend who saw somebody that works on iPhones pass out at 31 flavors last night. You know, like it's a whole thing. And I think sometimes that conversation gets lost because there is still a person somewhere who wanted an iPhone on 0 day, not a minute later, and didn't get one.
All right. I got a quiz for you guys.
Go ahead.
On this day, well, actually, what is today? On the 24th.
Around this day.
on April 24th, 2015, what magical thing happened?
Magical and revolutionary.
Oh, you know. He got it. the iWatch, the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Came in the mail. You got your Apple Watch.
It shipped.
It shipped. It was announced sometime earlier, but it actually shipped 2 years ago yesterday. Isn't that great?
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Apple Watch. Had we been sitting here, what would we have said? Would we say from that vantage point 2 years ago, looking at today, that it was a success? I don't think we'd say it was an unqualified success. We wouldn't say it was a failure either.
It was.
It would be headline success.
Be thrilled.
If this was Surface, like the Surface is a huge success, and I think it sells at 10% of what an Apple Watch sells, or some ridiculous number like that. So it's just compared to iPhone, nothing looks good. But if you take iPhone out of Apple, the Apple Watch is incredibly successful.
Fair to say, it wasn't all Apple had hoped. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is that it's a remarkable commercial success. It's a beautiful watch. The thing that I got wrong mentally about the concept of the watch is that, again, the Apple Watch now costs about as much as I paid for this watch. This is like a $200-$300 watch. I love it, and it's an analog watch.
It's Timex, I think.
It's a mundane Swiss railway watch.
Ooh.
With luminous hands and stuff.
Nice.
But again, it's people buy watches because they like the design. They like having them. They like putting them on in the morning. And Apple was well positioned to, no matter what this watch does, if all it did was do notifications and had no fitness features and had this really wonderful system of interchangeable high-end to low-end watch band swap-outs, it would be an excellent watch. It's a huge success on that basis. So that's something that I definitely got wrong. And I think that's something that Apple is maybe teaching a lot, or their success is teaching a lot of other people, that it doesn't have to be the revolutionary product. The only place that it's a failure is that it really is just a cool watch. It doesn't really bring anything in terms of moving humanity's relationship with technology forward or making people's lives better by, again, creating a brand new paradigm for computing. It's not that. It certainly not doesn't live up to the hype that Apple put into it when they introduced it. Again, I was present in the room during the rollout, and was one of the most confusing Apple presentations I've ever seen. It's like, and now we're going to show you live video of somebody of someone's garage door opening up because he was able to open the garage door remotely. I'm saying I have never once in a million years ever thought, oh no, this watch sucks because I can't open my garage door remotely and see live video of it. So it's not, it didn't revolutionize the world the way that the iPhone did, the way that the iPad did. It didn't really, it's not influenced that way, but like Renee said, really successful. You see lots of people wearing them and enjoying them, and that's really the only measure of success that needs to be. Again, really, it's a wonderful device. They make a cool watch, and people will buy it and wear it no matter what it does.
I think it advanced the cause of the larger phones, because everyone I know who first got one was really excited about it because they could leave their phone on the dock, in the backpack, in the purse, wherever it was. And I think, Andy, it sort of did make, I don't know if it necessarily furthered people's relationship with technology, but it made a lot of people rethink it, because now that you can get all your notifications on your arm, you really think, a lot of people thought a lot harder about what needed to be, what they needed to be notified about, I guess. And that's the thing to me that is,
I'm having audio trouble again.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't know. That's the thing to me that's interesting about the Apple Watch, is that I remember, like, right after everybody actually got them, there was a wave of articles about how to turn all that crap off on your watch. It was totally necessary, because a lot of people were like, yeah, there's actually a lot of stuff that I've let my phone notify me about over time that I want to not be notified of anymore. And for me personally, one of the things that I like about it is the get up and move, you know, get off your tuchus alerts. I actually like those because they make me get up and walk around. They make me get up and take a break, you know, from my screen, for even if it's just for a little while. I really like that. And I'm not a person who spends a ton of time exercising. So for me, the fact that it will track my steps and tell me to get up off my butt once in a while is great. And I like that I can get the notification on my arm for certain things, or be able to briefly reply to text messages, things like that, smaller stuff. I really like that I have that opportunity. And so for me, I feel like it did change my relationship with technology, because it also made me sort of go through all the notification on my phone. And my phone doesn't notify me about near as much stuff either. And I have opened my garage door with my watch, and I think it's awesome. I'm just going
to
point that out.
Okay, no, all power to you. I don't have that. I don't have that need for remote garage door access.
But I'm that person. If I can do it with my phone, it's cool. Right. If I can do it with my watch, it's even better, because I'm that person.
I want to do it by talking to Shlomo. So just to quickly respond to what Kelly was saying. my point is that these are all things that the Pebble Watch was already doing, and these are stuff that any fitness device with an OLED screen can do. And if anything, at the time, we haven't talked about this on the show for a couple of years, so I'll just say it again, that I think that was the thing that the Apple Watch didn't get anywhere close to right. What I like about Android Wear is that it really does take the idea of the job of this watch is to remove distractions from your device to make you have to look at screens less, not more. We will only put up a notification when it's timely and in the right context, and we will let you address whatever happens through that device, that notification really quickly. Whereas my big problem with the Apple Watch was that the designers really did think that this was going to be like an iPhone experience. I'd be fascinated by, you know, tapping through things, and the first thing I would want to see is this huge constellation of apps, and that I would want to like respond to every single email through my watch, as opposed to don't need that. Okay, thank you for alerting me, but that's not important to me right now. Dismiss.
The thing for me is that I think Andy's absolutely right in that Apple's big failure with the initial Apple Watch was not to deliver a minimally delightful product, which is what they did with iPhone and iPad. They weren't as certain what people would want, and that's because they entered the market way earlier than they did with tablet PC or with phones, which had a good 10 years of observation behind them. But what they did do to me is they did what Apple typically does, and that is sort of coagulate on a few really useful features. And to me, that was all convenience. Now, the Apple Watch now is second generation, so it's hard to compare it to like an iPhone 7 or an iPad Pro. It's more like the iPhone 3G or the iPad 2, where it's getting a little bit better, but already it's profound. For me, the difference is profound. I notice immediately if I'm not wearing it. The fitness things, absolutely, but it's the convenience of everything. When you have ubiquitous Apple Pay and all you're doing is tapping your wrist and not even reaching for a phone, it's magic. I went to get a smoked meat sandwich 2 days ago. The waiter was wearing an Apple Watch, and he's like, I can look at my text and my boss doesn't know because I'm not allowed to use my phone at the restaurant. And it's just all these little convenient use cases, whether it's like the fitness app or it's paying for things or it's checking your messages or it's the guy whose car got thrown and he couldn't reach his phone and he still called 911 right off his Apple Watch, or it's someone's heart rate monitor alerting them of a more serious problem. I think in subtle and profound ways, it has absolutely moved us forward technologically. I just think it's still so early that we haven't really seen the full effect, but we have the benefit of like now, 8-10 years.
Renee, but again, you're mentioning features that are pretty much
they didn't though. I mean, like every phone had those features before iPhone. Nokia had every phone, and Palm had every feature an iPhone had. I had Pebbles. They were garbage. I mean, I love Eric, but they were garbage compared to the Apple Watch. Android Wear, I still don't think has its act together. So it just, to me, it is a better wrist computer than it's ever been available before. And I think that was the benefit of having it.
I feel compelled to point out that Renee did not point out to him the most compelling feature, which is the Pokemon-like appeal.
That's
in
a
his
workout
brain.
App. That's like
No. I think it's the bands. I think he loves the bands.
The bands. That's what I'm talking about.
The bands are good.
And Georgia O'Keeffe paintings are just lovely pictures of flowers.
The bands are a really good point, because we've had traditional watchmakers making bands for years, and they didn't make them as effortless and easy to change as Apple. It took Apple coming in with a fresh set of eyes and saying, maybe you don't need a jewelry case or to take it to a professional jeweler to have your links changed or your watch band swap. Maybe we can make that easy. And they did. And I think we've seen a bunch of watch bands since that have benefited from them entering the market.
What I meant was the Pokemon, like, gotta catch them all mentality that apparently has of the band.
You cleverly weaved his two passions into one.
Yeah. If you want to know what the new Apple Watch bands look like, you go to Instagram and you look up Renee, and there they all are.
Yes. He's got them all.
Who needs Apple.com?
I just don't have a way to organize them. If you have a way to organize them, let me know. Mine are in a box.
Yeah, you know what? They're all in my drawer. I wish I had. Because unfortunately, you're rubbing off on me. Maybe I shouldn't sit so close.
Why isn't that a Kickstarter? This is the thing that I've wondered for months now.
A band box. A band box.
But they're like
band rack. Yeah, that's what mine looks like. Yeah.
Or a band.
Ooh, I like that white leather one. Is that an Apple white leather?
Yeah, that's
that would go nicely with
leather loop.
That would go with the Edition very well, I think.
I've tried it with the Edition. Yeah, it's not exactly the right white.
Oh,
though,
that's so why Apple didn't ship it.
At Apple's ID guest department about that.
That's the other thing. If you want to see what the bands look like with all the different bodies, again, Renee's
the guy. Renee's the guy.
It's like Renee, Leo. I have to do it for the readers.
Renee, I ask this question as out of love, and it's not out of even concern. I'm just actually
intervention.
I'm actually wondering about this. Have you ever like just been clothes shopping and you had a choice between like three or four different shirts and you made a pick based on, I actually have an Apple Watch this will go really well with? Have you ever done that?
No, but I've seen people who coordinate their woven nylon with their shirts. I have seen people who do that. I am not one of them because I'm nowhere nearly that coordinated, but I have seen those people.
Shocking.
You have no money left for clothes and tops after you spend all your money on bands.
Oh, exactly. Truth. Hashtag truth.
All right.
I have been known to change mine occasionally based on outfit or occasion. But I don't have a ton of them to choose from, so I don't do it a lot, but I do it once in a while.
I've been changing my bands a lot lately.
My mom does it for spring and fall. She gets a new watch band and changes it up for
no white watch bands before Labor Day, after Labor Day.
After Labor Day.
Let's take a break, and then we'll come up with the final outrage from the New York Times story.
Wait a minute. Has there been more since we started broadcasting?
No. I don't think.
You need to check.
Calling, paging Mike Isaac. Is there anything else you haven't said?
Leo.
Andy Yannakko's here. Kelly Guimont is here. Guimont. She likes Guimont. Is here. Wait, what are you doing with the I? You just throwing the I out? There's no I in Guimont?
Yeah, it's my married name, and that's how I was told it was.
Oh, you're stuck with it. That's it.
Yeah,
I ask? What's your maiden name?
You can. It's Spray, which is much easier to pronounce.
Kelly Spray, Spray?
Yep.
Or Spray, A-Y.
A-Y.
Kelly Spray.
That's the Canadian spelling.
I kind of like E-Y Kelly Spray. That could be your stage name. Of course, I don't know what business you'd be
in. I hadn't been married for a really long time.
Really long time. Our show, it's great to have you. Great to have you, Renee. Great to have you, Andy. Great to have all of you out there. And because you're geeks, I have something for you from our friends at Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country. When it comes to buying a new home or refinancing your existing home, you got to go to the mortgage lender who's got your best interests in mind, who gives you a process that's easy, transparent, fast. And there's none better than Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. I particularly like Rocket Mortgage because it's all online. But I have to say, given our last mortgage experience, Lisa and I bought a house about 3 years ago, it took more than a month to get approval for the loan. Like, we thought, it can't possibly take more than a week or two. We're going on vacation in 3 weeks. It couldn't possibly, we're faxing from vacation, not with Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage lets you submit everything you need with a push of a button. I mean, check stubs, check statements, pay stubs, any paperwork. And everybody's online now, so it's really easy. You could do it from your phone, your laptop, your tablet. You could do it on the road. You could do it out at an open house. You could say, hey, let's buy this house. You could go through the whole thing, quickenloans.com/MacBreak on your phone, and adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make it just right for you. Yes, press the go button. They probably call it the liftoff button. Press the liftoff button because it's Rocket Mortgage. And literally within minutes, you will get approved for a loan that's just right for you. No paperwork, no wasted time. It's fast. It's efficient. It's for the modern world. No more banks. No more waiting. Go completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Check it out. For a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online. Quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Kelly Spray is here from Mac Observer. Now, see, I can't say that because then you don't get the byline. So she's at Verso, V-E-R-S-O. What's the story of that on your Twitter handle?
It means left. Specifically, when you open a book, Verso. The left-hand page Verso.
There's the verse and the obverse. Yeah.
And I'm left-handed, and so I found that in the dictionary when I was very young. And so I went, hey, left-handed.
I'm Verso.
I'll just use that.
So your whole life, that's been kind of your handle? Like when you played Neopets and stuff?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I'm a lefty, too, but I just call myself Leo. I don't know. I haven't really come up with a great handle. Chief Twit is the closest I have to a handle. I use
Sinestro.
That. Sinestro. But I do have a really good motto. Because, it's in Latin, because all good mottos are in Latin. And you know that, Veni, Vidi, Vici was the motto. Was it Caesar? I came, I saw, I conquered. Veni, Vidi, Vici. So my motto is, Audeo, I heard. Video, I saw. Disco, I discovered. But it looks like audio, video, disco. So it's great. It works on both levels.
I danced.
Yeah, I came. I saw.
That's the way to go.
I boogied down. Yeah. Boogie fever. All right. Let's get to the next outrage.
Let's stop laughing, having fun, and be angry at corporations.
And again, credit to John Gruber, who parsed Mike Isaac's post. Actually, others must have, because the Times then later had a story on it. And Jojo Hedaya, the CEO of Unroll Me, had to make an apology. He called it heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Yeah. We can do better. So it turns out, and we learned this from Isaac's article at the very bottom. It's just like kind of matter of fact. They spent so much of their time, Uber did, one-upping rivals like Lyft. Uber devoted teams to competitive intelligence. Many businesses do this. Purchasing data from an analytics service you may have heard of. I just recently canceled yesterday my subscription to called Slice Intelligence. You've used a Slice app. It tells you when you've got packages on the way. In order to use that, you have to give them access to your email. Using an email digest service Slice owns called Unroll Me. We've even recommended Unroll.me. It's so cool.
Yeah.
You just sign up for it. You give it access to your email account. It looks for your subscriptions and unsubscribes you.
That's the problem.
Looks through your email account. Yeah. Looks through it again.
You give it access to your email
account. And if you're a Gmail user, it's not just today's emails. I have 11 years of emails that they can look through. We were talking to Cory Doctorow yesterday on Triangulation, by the way. Great interview. Cory's awesome. And he's very, he's privacy focused. He uses PopMail still. He says, I don't want to leave years of my mail on somebody else's server. Duh. But that was the whole selling point of Gmail, right? Is you can leave all your mail here and search at any time. And anyway, Unroll Me, turns out, and if you'd read the terms of service, you would have known this, had a nice business on the side. It was a free service, as is Slice. But apparently, they collected, when they went through your email, among other things, your Lyft receipts from the inbox and sold the anonymized data to Uber. Uber used the data to kind of gauge the health of Lyft's business. Slice confirmed it sells anonymized data. But, what we don't see in this article, but we all know, is that there's no such thing as anonymized data. We've seen so many experiments in universities and so forth taking so-called anonymized data and figuring out exactly who it came from. So I wouldn't count on it being anonymized.
And on top of that, if your privacy agreement says, hey, we will never sell identifiable information to you, that's fine so long as they never make you click through another user agreement ever again, because they can always change that. Right. And put that byte number.
Jojo Hedaya writes, our users are the heart of our company and service. So it's heartbreaking to see that some of our users are upset to learn about how we monetize our free service. It's in the terms of service. It's in their privacy policy. We need to do better. They are heartbroken because they got caught, not because...
infuriating.
And that's what Gruber says. Gruber's takedown is salty, to say the least. He says, give me an effing break. They're not heartbroken. They're in damage control mode because they were operating under the radar. Now they've been revealed. I, of course, immediately unsubscribed from Unroll.me and Slice. He calls them poop bags. He says, if you've signed up for Unroll.me, delete your account. They make money by selling your purchase receipts. The thing is, it's not just the Lyft receipts, right? That's the tip of the iceberg. Oh, wait a minute. They're mining that kind of stuff from my email and selling that to the highest bidder?
So to be clear, like, this kind of market basket analysis is not new. Traditionally, like, if you go to a 7-Eleven and you buy a Coca-Cola, Coke has no idea who you are, but 7-Eleven might, and they'll sell that data back to Coke. They'll sell it to Pepsi for competitive analysis, and they'll sell it to Pringles because they want to try to motivate them to pay more for better shelf positioning or to do different sales and things like that. The difference is that you were going into their place and using it in a very specific transaction, where here they're entreating customers to provide unlimited access for in perpetuity to all sorts of data, either like what they want now and what they might want in the future. And that's just horrifying. And there's all these services that want you to give, like, TripIt just said, like, why are you emailing us your receipts, Renee? Just give us access to your Gmail and we'll scan for them and do it all for you. And my reaction was, hell no, get off my planet. There is no amount of convenience that data is invaluable. It is so much more valuable than money, which is why these companies think of all these scumbag ways of trying to take our data from us. And I don't think we've been taught from a young age to value it the way we value.
Although when you have a service that's free,
you gotta
think about, well, this is not free for them. So how are they making money?
If you saw the data come out of your account, if you saw your intimate photos and your receipts and you see it animated on the screen going to, you'd say, oh my God, what are they taking? Stop. But it's invisible to us, so it feels like it really is free.
And for some people, UnrollMe was valuable enough that maybe they don't mind that their emails being mined. I know Gmail. Well, see, this is the difference. I know Google's looking through Gmail, but they're very clear about what they're looking for. As far as I know, they don't sell it to third parties. They're looking for keywords that they can sell ads against, and they don't tell the ad company, oh, Leo's mentioning death a lot. You should offer him a coffin. But when coffin makers come to Google and say, we want to buy ads for people who might be interested, then Google, without revealing to them, says, yeah, well, we've got some people here looking up, you know, but buying burial plots. They might be interested. So those kinds of things, I understand, and the problem is we shouldn't assume about how they're doing it. And I, by the way, Gmail's worth it for me. And for that, I don't mind. In fact, I prefer customized ads. Now, on the other hand, if I knew that Google were selling anonymized receipts from my purchases to some other company, I might be a little upset. I hope they're not. Are they?
And it was the diaper and the beer. Like, you could identify someone at a 7-Eleven because they bought diaper and beer at the same time. Like, you could pull the patterns out of these things. They ended up not being anonymous at all. You get one piece of information, like a telephone number and email address,
right,
and suddenly you knew everything about that person.
We've seen it over and over again. So, you know, researchers take anonymized Netflix data and they're able to immediately pinpoint who it is.
Yeah.
Anonymization is... But am I being naive? Is this just the tip of the iceberg? Is what UnrollMe doing, is it normal?
Yep.
Not yet.
Oh, go ahead.
Kelly says no. Andy says yes.
I said not yet.
Yeah.
It is not normal now. That's why everybody's up in arms about it. This is the same thing as before when we were talking about Uber. It's not normal now, but
it's the new normal.
I think it's going to be. Yeah, I do.
Why do you, Andy, why do you think that this is common practice?
When I look into various industries, again, if you are giving them data, they're going to use that data to whatever advantage they can have. This is the what I always think of as the big bag of free money in the middle of the table concept, where if business sees a big bag of free money in the middle of the table, they're not going to walk by the big bag of free money. They're going to take the big bag of free money. They're going to ask with the thing in their hand, they're going to ask their lawyers, is it legal for us to take this money? And the legal guys can say, yes, absolutely. So great, I'm going to take the big bag of free money. And when it comes to user data, if there is no law stopping them from doing it, if there is a law stopping them from doing it, but there is an easy way by slipping something into paragraph 2000 of a user agreement,
yeah, I guess so that we're they can do read it, those
they're
going to
do it
more closely. Here's an article. Here's an article from Ars Technica eight years ago. Massachusetts Group Insurance Commission had a bright idea back in the mid 1990s. It decided to release anonymized data on state employees that showed every single hospital visit. So that to help researchers in the state spent to help researchers. So the state removed all obvious identifiers like name, address, and social security number. But a graduate student in computer science got the data and was completely able to figure out exactly who it was. In fact, she found Governor Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, with no problem. It was an easy task. And this was 2009. Actually, this was in the 90s. This article's in 2009, and it goes on. There are lots of examples. AOL researchers released a data set of search queries. Netflix released that database. In both cases, people were able to identify specific individuals. So anonymous isn't anonymous. Companies, I agree, are monetizing. I would hope that Google says we're just doing it for ads. I hope that that's true. They're not lying. But you're right. No. There's so many clauses and paragraphs in every privacy statement that it's impossible.
Well, and I think part of the problem is not as much that people are doing that companies are doing it, but that people are finding out about it, because that's a big problem in my book, is that there did not used to be near as much awareness about this as there is now.
There's a reason Cory Doctorow, who is a privacy advocate, works for the EFF. There's a reason why he uses Popmail and doesn't leave his email on the server anywhere. He says the most they can have is like however many hours between the last time I
and
got
it costs
mail.
Him convenience. So he's making a
he
choice.
Says it. He says that. Yeah. It's incredibly inconvenient for him.
Oh, absolutely.
So long.
Yeah.
So long as consumers understand the transaction that's happening, so long as that company is being really clear about the data they're collecting, I think that's okay. And as long as every time they change the terms of service, they say there is a click through say yes, accept all these, but there's before that there are going to be four bullets saying this. Here's the major things that we're changing.
It should say when you sign up, just so you know. By the way, we're parsing through your email looking to find data. For companies will buy for a variety of reasons, including competitive research. We take your name out, just so you know. That's what we're doing. That's how we pay for this lovely free service. If that's okay with you, sign up.
The other problem is that if you start off with the three or four founders of the company that want to make the world a better place and create this thing that then they got their angel wings on, they've got their halos on, and they say, you know what, we can have a great successful company. We don't want to make a fortune, but we'll make enough money to make ourselves very comfortable. But we don't have to screw over our customers. And then four years later, they get investors.
Not only that, but
they've been through four or five rounds of financing, and now they don't have the ability to say they're going to say, well, they're going to be at a very, very cheap conference room with a very, very cheap executive saying that, well, we have all this data. Yes. Well, why are we not selling this data to mattress companies to sell people discount mattresses, sell that information on? Because that would be wrong. It's like, again, here is a big bag of money in the middle of the table. We can do that. If the only objection is that you don't want to do that, guess what? We own 70% of the company. We're going to do that.
Well, so remember when Radio Shack went out of business? Remember the Radio Shack Battery of the Month Club? Remember every time you went into a Radio Shack, they asked for your zip code and phone number? Well, that database was one of their assets when they went out of business. I remember there was a big deal about that data and whether the new owner would get it. And you know what? It just kind of puffed off in the distance. And I don't know the upshot of it. I bet you
didn't the story say that Slice wanted
the service
because they had those receipts. They knew they had that data.
Yeah. So bankrupt Radio Shack will sell the customer data they promised to keep private, says Boing Boing.
People were nervous when Facebook bought Instagram. I mean, like we kind of forget all the information they have about us until those points think.
Yeah, and it gets to what we were talking about earlier on. There's a lot of really great conversations in this show. And one of them is that I think it was last year that I finally kind of gave up and started posting to Instagram and started posting to Facebook. I still don't trust Facebook. I still really don't like what they do and how they go about their business or their attitude. But it became a choice of I can still choose not to be on Facebook, but that is where all of my family and most of my friends are having the conversations. And I have the choice of if I really want to be a presence in their lives and if I want them to be a presence in my lives, I'm going to have to use Facebook. I decided that, okay, I hate this, but I don't feel as though I have a choice because I want to be able to see pictures of my niece's vacation in London. And I can certainly text her and we can swap things, but that's a burden on her. So that's how these things happen.
Mm-hmm. I don't put any of my personal photos on any service that's a social network, but I like my junk. They're not junky, but they're sort of like pop culturally is what I use Instagram for. They're not personal
they're
family
beautiful.
Photos.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that because I would like to see more of your personal stuff on Facebook. Seriously.
Another question.
Don't you consider us your friends, Renee?
I'm a deeply private person. I just don't believe in putting that stuff.
Exactly.
I hate deeply private people. I want to see it. I just saw a good friend's baby sonogram.
As it was being born.
I saw inside Daria Rose's tummy.
It was live on a Facebook
story. She doesn't care about privacy. Why should you?
Is everyone using the MacBreak Weekly story, by the way? Because that just went live.
Yeah.
Oh.
And does anybody want to guess that, like, I'm sure that just for fun, there are engineers inside Facebook and Google saying, can we get facial recognition working starting with the sonogram?
I guess they can. I bet you anything.
Oh, but remember Google had that commercial where they were encouraging the father to give his child a Gmail account from birth and people had a huge outcry against it?
Yeah.
They just start your kids right away.
I like that idea. But again, it depends on how your mind is bent, you know, which way you go. And so the couple of points to take away. First of all, this has always been going on back to 1992. Blockbuster sold their data, EchoStar, when they sold out. Radio Shack sold their data to the highest bidder. They had an auction for it. So this digital thing is nothing new, except that it's much more widespread and they have a lot more of our data. It makes, I think for people like us, we can run our own email server. We can be sophisticated enough to solve this and keep our data to ourselves somewhat, or not post personal photos on Instagram. But most people are just going blithely ahead and they may not even know what's being given up. Maybe they don't care. I don't know.
Convenience is a huge thing. Like, again, like all these services that will just tie directly into your Gmail in perpetuity. There's, again, the same thing with Pokemon. There's all these services that will tell you exactly the power of all your creatures if all you do is give them access to your Pokemon account.
Oh, that's good.
Who knows? Maybe you're a bot. Yeah, but like you think it used to be the old days. They'd say, like, free porn, click here, and you'd click on it, and then all of a sudden you had the fire. It's just people are very willing to, like, do a quick little click because they think they're getting something out of it. And the transaction, right, what Andy mentioned earlier, the value of the transaction is not explicit for them.
I will point out that John Gruber points to a comment unverified on Hacker News by Carl Katsky, who says, I worked for a company that nearly acquired UnrollMe. At the time, which is over 3 years ago, they had kept a copy of every single email of yours that you sent or received while a part of their service in a series of poorly secured Amazon S3 buckets. A large part of Slice buying UnrollMe was for access to these email archives to look for keyword trends and receipts from online purchases. He goes on to say the founders of UnrollMe were pretty dishonest, which is why we didn't buy them. They had other issues as well. But mostly, I think the takeaway, and this, the reason I bring this up, is many of these companies don't secure this data very well.
Yep.
Yeah.
The weakest link.
So
I keep seeing that, yeah.
You may be giving permission to the company. You may say, well, I get enough from Gmail for that. But you may also be giving it to some Joe hacker down the street. All right, let's take a break. We got to come back because we're running out of time. Your picks of the week. Prepare them, ladies and gentlemen. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. The all-new version of FreshBooks accounting software has just gone up, and you're going to love it. If you haven't looked at FreshBooks in a while, try it. You can try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. It all started for me when I was using FreshBooks to invoice. This is 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. Because I was invoicing, I had to invoice Rogers in Canada, so I had to do it in Canadian dollars. That was a pain. I used to fire up Excel and do the calculations, and then I had to send them expenses. And FreshBooks solved it. I took pictures of the receipts, put it all, you know, the invoice I created in 30 seconds. It looked beautiful, had my logo and everything. And they did the currency calculations and everything. Not only that, I got paid faster, and you will get paid faster because FreshBooks invoices enable your clients to pay you online right from the invoice using a credit card. No setup on your part. They could pay straight from the invoice. So on average, FreshBooks users get paid 11 days faster. Plus, the information's at your fingertips. You can see what invoices have been sent, what ones have been paid, not paid. You can even send out, you know, reminders, growing increasingly less gentle. You can see even which invoices have been viewed, which is a very useful thing. Did they see that invoice? Oh, they did. They're just ignoring it. It's so awesome. Auto payment reminders, automatic late fees if you want, recurring invoices. You can bill. They have time tracking in the app and on the website, which means you can bill for time not only by client but by specific project. You can even track your time to the minute and manage team timesheets as well. I can go on and on. It is fantastic. You can track expenses and integrate them right into whatever you use, Stripe, Shopify, Gusto, Acuity, Scheduling, Concur, and Expensify that do the expense reporting, right? If you want to keep track of business miles, things like that, it is awesome. I want you to check out FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. You'll save 2 days of paperwork a month and make tax time a breeze next year. This is the time to do it. Remember, because the pain of tax time is still fresh in your memory. Fresh.
I just did mine. Sweetness.
Yeah, right? Do you want to do that again in a year? No,
well,
you don't.
I may as well do my financial planning now. I'm already depressed.
If you start FreshBooks now, next year, you just, you know, you get all the reports your accountant or your bookkeeper wants or for you. And it's easy. It's like push button. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. 30 days free. Do me a favor, though. Mention MacBreak Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us? How Did You Hear About Us section? Say MacBreak Weekly. All right. Show of hands. Who has a pick? Anybody? Kelly Guimont.
Can we mention one thing before we do picks, though, Leo?
Yes.
the Apple changing the terms on their affiliate program.
Yes. We didn't leave. We left that out because we were over time.
So I didn't want to make it a pick of the week, though.
Don't make it a pick of the week. It's actually a big deal, though. They're reducing the commission considerably, like 5%, right?
It's down from 7% to 2.5%.
Nice. Yeah.
And they gave 1 week's notice.
That's a 64% cut. Yeah. So what does that mean? If you're an affiliate, you'll... Oh, wait a minute. That means you'll get less money.
Yeah, a lot of developers use affiliate links in order to supplement their App Store income because it's never not mind. Easier to sell paid ads.
I thought that meant they were taking less money. They're giving less money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not such good news.
No. But now, Google has always given 0%, so it's not like there's a lot of competition in this area, but it's still, absent any word from Apple on why this is happening, it's very disappointing.
That actually is a pretty big cut. 7% was generous.
Yeah.
Federico Vitici says, so yeah, this change in affiliate commissions pretty much sucks. We don't rely on links alone, thankfully, but we'll be affected by it. Who is Federico? He does...
runs MacStories.net.
That's it.
Tremendous site, right. Tremendous writer.
That's sad.
Back in the day, we used to pay a full-time app editor's salary just off App Store revenue, and it's gotten less and less over the years.
Well, we do it with Amazon, right?
Amazon has cut their rates too.
Recently. They don't. You know what? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do?
We try to get off ads by going to affiliate, because the ads are getting worse, and now the affiliate's getting worse. So, tiny violins.
Just all means more ads, doesn't it?
We'll see.
Okay, sorry, Renee.
Sorry.
Now,
we
Kelly.
I think
we didn't get to a lot of stories, and I apologize, but I think we had some great conversations. So, Kelly Gumont. Hey, Kelly. Hey, Verso. What do you got for us?
Yeah. So, I have two things, and they're analog. One of them is sort of a bonus pick, but I'm going to start with an item from Uniball, which is the mechanical pencil. And it's the Kuru Toga mechanical pencil. Now, I have the Hello Kitty one. And here's why it's awesome. aside from having Hello Kitty on it, of course. Here's why the Kuru Toga is awesome. Because normally, like when you use a mechanical pencil, you pick it up kind of the same way and hold it kind of the same all the time. And you write and you write and you write and you end up with the long, sharp point on your on the lead.
Right.
Well, with this... the reason it's called Kuru Toga, it's Japanese, and it's two words, and one of them is rotation, basically. I don't remember the exact translation off the top of my head. And the way it works is every time you pick it up and put it down, it rotates the lead around a teeny tiny bit, so you never get that long, sharp side, and you never end up slicing through your page. So it's awesome. And they come in a few different point sizes. I have the 0.5, which I really
like. Oh, you like a tight, tiny point. Yeah.
I do. And
I
it's,
do too. I do
because
too.
I'm left-handed. Yep. It comes from having pens.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a hook writer. I don't do the hook
Me
hand.
Neither.
So I drag my hand across it and I get blue hand. And so that's part of why I like pencils in the first place.
Right. No I am a kind hand. Of a, this is funny because I'm a big pen and mechanical pencil aficionado. And I never heard of this. And they're not expensive.
Less than $10. And the other thing that I really like about them, I have another one that's plain, but why would I show you the plain one when I have one with Hello Kitty on it?
Right.
There's sort of a rubber grip here. This red part is rubber. And so when you hold on to it, it's a little cushiony and a little soft and grippy. So you're not necessarily having to hold on to just the plastic part and have it slide around in your hand. So, and it does have the standard issue take off the top. There's an eraser in there. You know, the whole thing. So that's my one pick. My big pick is this one. I like to pick stuff that's super useful and not necessarily very expensive. So here it is. And you don't have to get a Hello Kitty one. There's a red and white. But there's also lots of other designs. So like if you like all your pens to be blue or orange or green or whatever, they have a lot of different body styles. But it's still the Uniball Kuru Toga is the great one. And I like it. To write in my Staples Arc notebook,
which is also Hello Kitty.
Butts Maru.
Yes, I have. I've also covered mine in stickers. And
I see. Didn't come that way.
No, it came plain blue, and then meet Kelly through the stickers on her notebook. So there you go. The thing that I like about this is that it's got these little rings, and then everything snaps on and off of it. And what's in there? Okay. Hey, a CD. All right. So you can peel off and put in there whatever you want. So I have this clear zipper envelope that I can keep stuff in. I have other stuff in here for different projects that I'm working on. There's dividers. And you can add different paper. You can get a hole punch, and you can punch holes in regular paper and put in there. There's loads and loads of stuff that you can do to customize it so that you get the notebook that you want, which for some people is very difficult, and for some people is, you know, nigh impossible. If you need to carry around a lot of paper, you can get bigger physical discs in order to have more pages. You can have all different kinds of covers. If you don't want to put stickers on it, there's like the quilted leather that's super awesome. If you want no tabs, you don't have to have the little tab things at all. If you have a full, this is sort of a half size one, and there's one that will hold standard 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. And with that one, you can get a lot of other stuff as well. And if you needed to carry around other things, you can, like I said, get the hole punch and punch all those out. The Levenger Circa is what it's like, but it's a little bit more affordable and a little bit more easily available, because you can go to Staples and like pick everything up and touch it and put your hands on it and see what you think. And I really like it. I do have the larger full size one. I use that strictly for house projects, because whenever I have to get estimates for something on the driveway or something on the house or whatever, whenever I get those, they're these full size pieces of paper, and you can get like portfolio pockets for them and the whole thing. And I love them because I can make it be the notebook that I need and not just the notebook that I can buy.
Perfect. So. Pen and paper. Who'd have thunk it?
I write so much more stuff down, even like in 2017 with all the technology we have available. You know, I have the watch. We've, you know, we talked about it. I have a phone. I have all those things. But I still find that for me, the most comforting, I guess, in a way, is when I have a lot of stuff to do and it's all on my mind and I can't shake it. Typing it into a to-do list isn't the thing that helps me. What helps me is to sit down and write it all out by hand with my Kurutoga pencil that has Hello Kitty on it. Because they didn't have Star Wars. That's
yes,
why I have Hello Kitty.
But how is Google supposed to scrape your information if you keep using pen and paper? You're not helping.
That's their problem. That's not my problem. My problem is when I type it, I don't remember as well as when I write things down. So that's why I still take notes by hand and everything.
Yeah.
So
Thank you, Kelly. How about you, Andy and Nako? What do you got for us?
This is I one think of my, you have my things.
I think you have my son's graduation present is what you have.
Yeah, this Spoilers. Is really nice. This is the Mi Photo Walkabout Air monopod.
I love monopods.
Which I bought recently. I've been trying to find. It is very lightsaber like. I like the in the design of it. The reasons for having a monopod is that tripods, even the tiny travel tripods, are way too bulky, I think, to just carry with it, whether you know you're going to need it or not. And monopods, if they're not a crappy one, are almost as good, because they're just a solid pole, so that you can't stand it up and walk away from it. But it means that if you're inside a museum or something, or if you're shooting video and you don't want to get that sort of, you know, that sort of again bouncy puppet effect, they really do wonders. I like this one the most because I already had a Mi Photo actual tripod, and I really like the construction of them. But also, I really like the way that you extend it. You just twist this and just pull it, and then twist it again, and it's locked, and that's it.
Oh, wow.
And then after you get your shot, you twist it again, you push it, and you twist it, and it's locked. And you, of course, do that for any length, and the maximum length is about eye height. I'm an average American male, and it's about a little bit above my eye line. So you can really get just for sports photography, for really anything. And it'd be great if it were just a little bit shorter. It's about 13 inches and a little bit more, but it is small enough that I can stick it in my laptop bag or hang it off of it. I've traveled with a travel tripod that's about this long, strapped to the outside of my laptop bag. It works, but you really do feel like Dorcas Augustus, like, hey, look at me. I've got a big tripod with me wherever I go. Whereas this just makes it look like, please don't mug me because I've got a big thing. This could have electrodes on the end of it. It's also available in 7 colors. I got the black, but it's also lime green, orange, purple, red, silver. And not only that, but you can also get a top for it that's just sort of like a walking stick top in the same color with a little compass in it, so you can actually use it as a walking stick. It's $70, which is $65, which is not terribly cheap, but again, it's not a $300 monopod, which you can get. It's also not a $10 monopod on Amazon, where it's just going to fold in half, and it's not going to be as compact, and it's not going to be as easy to extend and put back again. The only warning is that it really is designed, it's sold as a monopod, which means that it comes with nothing to attach your camera to, just like a quarter inch post. And so go on Amazon or anywhere else, and you can get a decent head for anywhere from $5, which will work fine, to a nicer one that's like $20 or $25 that has, this one has a quick release plate and you can pivot it and then lock it down. So it's, there are still times when I like to travel with a tripod, but this is now, this is my solution for, I don't know if I'm going to want a tripod or not, so I'll just take this with me. And the last reason I have it is that I don't want, I could die and be hit by a bus at any moment. I do not want it to be said that I ever bought a selfie stick. However, you can use this as a selfie stick. Without saying that. No. This is my Mi Photo Professional monopod. It's not a selfie stick, even though I'm using it. Even though I'm using it, hey, look, I'm a cyclist. Look at me, Instagram.
I'm a major fan of monopods. They're really much more convenient. They can go places that tripods can't go, as you say.
Right. And they're also, again, there are times where I've extended it because I wanted to get, like, I'm taking pictures of a monument that I really, a piece of public sculpture that I like outside in a park. And suddenly realized that, wait a minute, I can just extend this and now get the shot like 6 feet higher than my eye line. I can actually get a portrait of that face. So this has been one of the, again, this is one of those purchases that really, really worked out for me. I'm very, very happy with it. It's not even that expensive either.
Nice. Renee Ritchie. You're going to live up to your reputation here, I think.
Yeah. No, just to add to Andy's thing, if you're like a guerrilla blogger reviewer and you've got to shoot your video in public places where tripods are illegal, they often do not have laws against monopods. They can't say anything if you use those. So they're terrific.
Just add one postscript. Also, there are rules against them, but what they really don't want, it's really against is you like being disruptive and ruining other people's time. Yeah, yeah. Even if there's a rule against monopods, it's like they will. I've had situations where the guard or whatever will see you. Like it's extended in 10 seconds, in like 5 seconds. I got my shot. It's again away in another 3 seconds. So they're like, okay, I don't need to interfere. He's not.
They come to hassle you, you've already got it put away.
And I got this big piece of steel in my hand, so that's good. Sorry.
So in honor of the Apple Watch's anniversary, I thought I'd live up to the stereotype. I would own the cliche. And I did Apple's fitness challenge. They did Earth Day fitness challenge, and I mistakenly wore a yellow leather band, and it was just not the best thing. So,
yeah,
I went out so eager before thinking about it.
Right.
So Apple now sells the Nike Plus band separately. So you can get them in black and bolt, which is their green color. You can get them in anthracite and black, which is like a dark charcoal gray and black. And you can get them in this one, which is off-white and white. I think it's platinum and white is the official terminology.
Which one looks best on the ceramic?
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
The platinum off-white. And white. It's like less. What did we say last time? It's like not Les Nessman, but the other character from WKRP.
Yes.
Herb Tarlick's
belt, but in watch form. It's just.
Oh, my God. It is.
It's just a really. I like it. It's a very clean. It's very. It's a very nice look. It matches the ceramic perfectly. But the black one is really great too. And they're exactly like the sports bands, but the sports bands would sometimes get sweaty. And because these are perforated, it gives you a lot more breathability and it just makes for a really interesting look. I'm really sold on it. So
yeah, all it needs is a Hello Kitty sticker. And I think you've got something there.
Kelly, I'm going to call you right after this.
If it were red and white, if there were a Nike Plus red and white, I'd
colors
be right
so
there.
Bad. Red and white, pink and white, orange and white. So many possibilities.
Yeah. And as usual, for $49, Apple gets a premium price for its
floral elastomer. And they have people who make fake sweat every day just to make sure it doesn't irritate your
skin. Fake sweat to know.
Every day.
Just to know.
Yeah.
Thank you, boy and girl. It's been a lot of fun. Renee Ritchie's at iMore.com. He's a great podcast there. And all his great writing and just good stuff. iMore.com, Apple Talk the podcast. and others.
The next 10 words, we changed the name on you.
Right. Next 10 words. Did Apple send you a cease and desist or something?
No, not at all. We just wanted to go beyond Apple. So this week we have Matthew Panzerino on talking about the, fragmentation of messaging apps.
And he was also at that event, at that five-person
briefing. Well, that was
briefing.
The whole thing is that like Apple called a mulligan on that. What will they next call a mulligan on? Cross-platform, iMessage, touchscreen maps. I mean, there's a whole possibilities.
Oh, cross-message, iMessage would be fantastic. Cross-platform, iMessage would be fantastic. I'm waiting for that because Google's just dropped the ball completely.
Or as Ben Beharin said, Windows only. Not for Android, but we'll do it for Windows.
Yeah, maybe. Andy Anako, Chicago Sun-Times, always a slice. Are you working on anything for the Times?
Yeah, finally getting around to reviewing the MacBook Pro. So basically savoring. I'm sorry, I'm not going to say
I got no I got no problem with that because I really think these thoughtful. Most people who are going to buy the new MacBook Pro haven't bought it yet, so it's really good to have those thoughtful, well-designed, well-researched.
It's been something that I've actually been working on for several months because I wanted to really stress test my conclusions.
And your editors must be very tolerant.
They've pretty much I've broken their spirits to this stage that they've given up and they're just bull. Check, do a spell check, make sure that I don't mention any name brands.
Spell did not go right. I'm good to go.
Okay, Anako.
Which also, so I'd like to also to add, so I'll probably be looking for a new columnist position somewhere. I'd say in 2 weeks' time.
Anybody
got a slot open?
No. Well, you'd be quite a catch for anybody. Thank you, Andrew.
Well, thank you. I do keep in shape.
And I might see you. We're going out. Well, maybe we're not going out. I don't know. We won a Webby for triangulation. But then
five words, Leo.
Thank you. But Karsten has just told me that I have to come up with a five-word. It's a competition to see who goes on stage for the person with the best acceptance speech.
I said it before the show. I will now say it on the public record. Again, buy a $2,000 Kylo Ren costume, wear it to the show, and your speech is, costume's now tax deductible.
Perfect.
And you will have it. And you will have a Kylo. If you have a Kylo Ren costume that you can at least write off.
And of course, great to have you, Kelly Gaumont of Mac Observer fame, and at Verso on the Twitter. Always.
And also App Camp for Girls.
And don't forget, we gotta always give you a plug for that App Camp for Girls. you're taking signups now, right?
Yes.
For the summer.
Yeah, we're in Portland, Seattle, Phoenix, and this year Chicago.
Nice. Everybody should head on over to the website, which is
appcamp4girls.org.
Very good. And give my regards to Jean McDonald too. She's a jewel. We thank all of you for being here. Our great studio audience. If you want to be in the studio audience, we'd love to have you. Just only one injury today, which is good. Email tickets. It'll heal, I promise. Tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to be here. We also, of course, stream live. You can watch that at twit.tv/live or youtube.com/twit or ustream.com/twit or twitch.tv/twit and watch this live stream. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But if you're tied up, as many people are, on a Tuesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, by all means, download and watch the on-demand version. You'll find it at twit.tv/mbw. But the best way, and I strongly encourage you to do it, is to get that podcast app. There's so many great ones. And subscribe. That way you won't miss a single episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. But now I'm afraid it's time to get back to work because break time is over.